Hello and welcome to Time Bandits. Time Bandits is the podcast where every 2 weeks we go back in time 25 years to the year 1989 to celebrate a film and an album release in that year. It's the silver anniversary. That was all one breath. My name is Greg Legros. I'm looking at Dan Gorman. Dan Gorman, what's the score, babe?
Gotta go back in time.
Very good.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. How's it going?
Oh, swell. I'm having coffee. You're having beer. You look nice
beer.
Today.
Yeah. Yep.
Very sleek today. Gorman's all in black.
Thanks.
Mm-hmm. I'm just drinking it in. Everyone just mind your own business. Casey Lyons, I'm looking at you now.
Look at me.
What's the score, babe?
I win.
Oh.
I win everything.
Fair enough.
Yeah. There need be no score.
No, I think there's a score. Babe.
Sorry, babe.
Babe. Bubby.
Bubby. I'd like you to call me Bubby from now on.
All right. Well, I'm going to shift attention to our special guest, very special guest, musician, painter, new father, Matt Bann, how are you today? What's the score, babe?
I'm doing marvelous.
Yep.
And, the game's not over yet.
That's true. So. Keep your stick on the ice.
Exactly.
A lovely daughter you've produced into this world.
I had very little to do with it.
Fair enough.
I showed up the once.
One time.
It's mostly the misses.
Well, congratulations, though. That's wonderful news.
Thanks, guys.
Well, let's leave all this good news in the year 2014.
Yeah.
And we're going to hop in the Klingon Bird of Prey.
Oh, sweet.
And slingshot around the sun.
Awesome.
And get our asses back in time. All right, everyone ready?
Yeah.
Get in. Well, here we are. Guess what, everybody? It's April 21st, 1989.
Oh, my God.
Yeah. See, now, we'll talk about dates and release dates in a minute. But it is April 21st, 1989. We could have seen anything we wanted to. We could have seen Cyborg again. We could have seen Dead Calm.
Ooh, I love that movie.
Yeah, Nicole Kidman.
Dead Calm? Yeah, that's a great movie.
That's a really good movie. Nicole Kidman's very good in it. Billy Zane. Nicole Kidman's butt.
Yeah, great yeah, that movie. Was the last movie Nicole Kidman was sexy
that's
in.
That's true. Oh, we could have seen Major League. I love that movie.
That's a great one.
Wonderful film.
What's up?
We could have seen Kickboxer. Yeah. K-9. Oh, goodness.
Great. Oh, man. Balloosh.
Anyway, we didn't see any of those. We saw Red Scorpion.
Yeah.
Dolph Lundgren. We also listened to The Tragically Hip, but we'll get to that later. First of all,
Red Scorpion. Directed by Joseph Zito of Invasion USA, mm-hmm. and he did a Friday the 13th.
Sure.
A cool slasher called The Prowler.
Sure.
Tom Savini.
Notably, by the way, co-written by Jack Abramoff.
Yeah.
Is that weird?
I didn't even notice that.
What's that?
There was a movie about him.
Casino Jack. Casino Jack, yeah.
He's like, a right-wing lobbyist or something.
Well, he was before they threw him in jail.
They went to the big house.
That's what they do.
Yeah. Fucking, I was like, I saw that name and I'm like, Jack Abramoff, why do I, wait, what?
Yeah.
Turns out him and his brother fucking co-wrote this thing.
Amazing.
Yeah.
I IMDb'd it and they wrote a bunch of other ones, too. Action flicks.
Yeah.
Did you see the movie Casino Jack?
No, I never did.
Kevin Spacey?
Kevin Spacey.
There's like a giant Red Scorpion posters like scattered throughout his house. And everything is pretty awesome.
Oh, wonderful.
Oh, that's
I was
going to
say, do they have a Red Scorpion mentioned in there? Because clearly this is the only reason maybe he could have gotten out of jail was like, listen.
Yeah, look, I
did write Red Scorpion.
Yeah.
You know. It was released, if you look it on your IMDb and you're going to be like, hey guys, that says 1988.
Yeah.
It's because it was released on like Christmas Day in Korea.
Shut up.
In 1988. It was released in North America and other places on April 21st, 1989. Get the fuck out of my face.
Yeah.
Okay. Straight to video in England.
That's right, in 1990.
Awesome.
Fair enough.
Had any of us seen this?
This was my first trip down Red Scorpion Way.
Yeah, I'd never seen it.
No, yep. I was it was new to me.
Yeah. Yeah. I had seen the box a number of times in the video store.
Oh, yeah,
went,
yeah.
No, thanks.
I don't need
Sorry, Dolph.
A Red Scorpion.
It's not happening.
Yeah, I had never seen either. Should we, is there a rundown on IMDb? For
I imagine
listeners?
It has something to do with a Russian secret service agent who's supposed to kill some kind of rebel leader in Africa. Well, but then starts to sympathize with the rebels himself.
We got a tagline here. This is good. He's a human killing machine. Taught to stalk.
Oh.
Trained to kill.
Taught to stalk.
To stalk.
Programmed to destroy.
I thought he was making like chicken broth.
Yeah. He's taught to make a really nice stalk.
Taught to stalk.
Yeah.
He will make you a soup.
Yeah.
And kick your ass.
He's played by their rules until now.
Oh. I think my synopsis was more detailed.
Yeah.
It made more sense.
Sure.
Plot summary. Let's see. It's loading.
I got one. A Russian KGB agent is sent to Africa to kill an anti-communist black revolutionary. However, he has a change of heart when he sees how the Russians and their Cuban allies are killing and repressing the locals, so he switches sides and helps the rebels.
Yeah.
You probably watched Red Dawn in there, too. Yeah.
Mercenaries, same thing.
Yeah, sure.
Yeah. Do back in Africa.
Yeah. See, now the last time you were on the show, we had mercenary fighters, had a big dumb white guy switch sides in an African country. I had no idea that's what Red Scorpion was about. But now you're the white guy switches sides in African country guy movie guy.
Put me in, coach.
Very good. So now this movie starts with them, like, saying his name, like Nikolai, whatever it is.
Yeah.
And there's snapshots of him, like they're watching a slide. Are they watching a slide? They do watch a slideshow later in the meeting they're in. Yeah. Are they watching a slideshow of him?
I think so.
So he went to, like, a secret agent photo shoot.
Yeah, yeah. Before the meeting.
The picture's done.
Just for the meeting.
These are just for meetings. Don't worry.
Like a dramatic badass.
It's pretty good. Yeah, I know.
Yeah, absolutely.
I hire that photographer.
Listen, the pictures are good. They sold me. I thought that guy, if I needed him to kill some people, he could probably do it.
Or seduce them.
Yeah, or, yeah. Yeah. We got a honeypot.
Yeah.
Gross.
Yeah.
Yeah, I thought that was funny. I'm like, so are they looking at pictures of him? Did he have he had a little photo shoot one day?
Yeah.
Look less mean. More Russian. We're friendlier now.
Yeah.
We'll murder you nicely. So then we open up and we're on a meeting about him being very good. He comes in. He's cold.
Yeah.
He's really mean to that guy.
Yeah.
I don't know why. He doesn't authority. He doesn't care for it. Is that it? I don't know.
No, it's because he's like such like a badass. He's like the top killer. You know what? Born to stalk.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's true. Those who are born to stalk, not great in meetings.
That's anyone will tell you that.
Yeah. I have a shirt that says that.
Yeah.
I assume it's true. He's given now the slideshow moves on to the target. Do we have names here? I don't have anybody's name.
We've got Kalunda Kintash.
He's
got to befriend.
That's who he has to befriend to get the target.
Oh, so the target is the other guy.
Yeah.
See, now I always thought that Kalunda was the...
Sweato or something?
Yeah, something like that. I don't have any notes.
Let me find him. Yeah, I found myself...
It's the guy in
Ongo,
sweater vest.
Ongo.
Yeah, sweater vest guy.
Yeah.
Yeah, see, I didn't... I watched this a while back, so yeah. It's been
he's
got to
go befriend...
Sweater vest Sundata.
He has to go befriend...
That's his blues name.
I saw him open up for Blues Hammer a while back. Yeah. It was good. It's pretty good.
Authentic. Yeah. He's got to befriend that guy who's one of the jive talkers the airplane.
I was so disappointed that there was zero jive talk in this movie.
Come on, just once.
Come on, lay him down, smack him, yak him. Yeah. Come on.
He's also the guy who threatens Michael J. Fox with a baseball bat in Back to the Future 2 when he goes into the alternate 1985 and tries to break into his own house.
Yeah. Speaking of the writer, just to jump back for the Jack Abramoff thing. I don't know if you looked at the trivia section for this, Casey, but there's an entry in the trivia that says allegedly financed by the South African Defense Force through the International Freedom Foundation, a right-wing political think tank, which it funded.
Mm-hmm.
Red Scorpion co-writer, producer Jack Abramoff helped to run this foundation.
Yeah.
Oh, my goodness.
So,
whatever angles you got.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. Yeah.
Good. So at this point, he takes the mission. He knows he has to go in and befriend airplane guy.
Yeah.
And I've already forgotten his name.
Kalunda.
Huh?
Kalunda.
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 And so then we, as his mission is being described to him, we cut to the camp where he's going to be stationed as a like a liaison officer, basically.
Yeah.
So I didn't really know what to expect of this movie at this point. I'm like, right on. I like the title sequence, like, you know, a couple of pictures of him. I'll go
into one,
Red Scorpion. I'm like, yeah right.
That was kind of cool.
I wanted more. I'm like, there should be a full credit sequence with this kind of shit. I'd be super down, but that's okay.
Yeah.
You get to see a cool gun before the credits, though.
This is true. That's
this is the first cool gun.
Pretty nice.
It comes up quite a bit.
Yeah.
Yeah, there's some sweet guns in this movie. Yeah. I will say that.
I got to say, I really liked this movie.
This movie is pretty good.
Okay, so I what I remember from when I watched this was I do remember sending you guys some messages like 15 or 20 minutes into it when shit starts to explode.
Oh, man.
And I was like, this is the greatest movie I've ever seen in my entire life.
The but action I do think, sequences are very good.
Oh, the action sequences are so good. It does kind of derail itself with
it gets
an extended
really
period where
his soul searching middle.
Like,
that part but needed to be much fucking.
There's a lot less Little Richard in the middle.
It's true.
Yeah.
Right? But there is a lot in the beginning.
There's so much in the beginning.
But
picks up again at the end.
I have to say, I was kind of like, oh, right. I was so close to thinking this was like one of those amazing bonkers movies straight through.
But
I will have. I do kind of want to give it credit though, because it really does just be like, nope, he's in the wilderness now alone, and we're just gonna go and like stop the entire movie and he's gonna go see a tribe and like it's just gonna be crazy in a different way.
But like, as if to add insult to boring injury, like there are long shots of him just lying on the sand.
And at multiple different times. And not just one shot. He lies down in the sand a great many times.
Several times.
More trivia. John Curran saw this movie and then decided to make Tracks with Mia. I'm just kidding. He was like, what if that was a movie?
I was desperately trying to make the connection in my head.
Listen, I will give them credit for at least having the balls to do it and not just having him flip-flop like that.
Yeah.
You know, he had to be, you know, really give up his devotion to his country.
He does go on a journey.
He does. He does. It's a multi-stepped journey.
Yeah.
So he's at in camp and they have caught Kalinda and he is going to, there's rumors that there's going to be a public execution. So he's got to befriend him. He's got to get him out of there. The best way to do that is to get into a jail cell with him.
Yeah.
So
how does he do that, Craig?
Well, he swishes around some vodka in his mouth, spits it out, pours the vodka out, puts vodka water into the bottle, and then walks into town to act like a crazy drunk, which is generally how I start my evening.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
fake drunk is the best. And he wanders into the their cantina or whatever.
Yeah, the saloon.
And one of my favorite parts.
This is a wonderful bunch of shit going on here.
Little Richard is blasting the whole time.
And I liked, at least it wasn't the same song over and over. I guess they saw Predator and they were like, that works good in an action movie.
They saw Predator. They could only afford one song. And film history was made.
So, yeah, he walks in. There's the din of drunken soldiers in a bar.
Yeah.
He looks them around. And, you know, he's supposed to be there. He's not out of place. You know, it's Cubans and Russians.
Yeah.
Again, Red Dawn. I was waiting for the Wolverines the whole time. And he burps loudly, which sends a silence across
that
the room.
That stops everybody.
Everybody. Yeah. I was like, why?
Because he didn't say, excuse me.
Right, fair enough. Yeah, it is highly rude.
Yeah.
I was amazed that they all heard it, though, you know. Why you got to be so rude?
Yeah.
You know that he just bumping too.
No, at that point, I was like, I love, like, this movie.
Oh, yeah. I'm like, what are we doing here? I still don't, at this point, I wasn't committed to loving it. I'm like, what's happening?
Yeah.
And then he follows that up just by being a colossal asshole
to everybody.
Everybody. Yeah, yeah. A lot of shoving people down.
Also very rude.
Yeah, super rude.
It's unbecoming.
Yeah.
Yeah.
A guy punches him over and over to no effect.
No. And then he punches him the fuck out.
But, yeah.
And
no, headbutts him out.
Yeah, and then he calls
then
him
punches him out.
Bastard.
Yeah.
God, what's coming to
him? He had a lot of dialogue I didn't understand in this movie. I backed it up a couple of times.
Yeah.
Like, What did you just mumble there?
Oh, you didn't understand the actual words.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
No, there was a couple points where I was like, I don't know what's going on in this movie, but there's a lot of explosions, and I really like it.
So, yeah, he creates a scene, and then he just takes somebody's machine gun and just fires it off him, you know. And then a commanding officer, a Cuban commanding officer comes in.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because the Cubans are running the camp.
Right. And he comes in, and I guess this is the big... They dump out like the big line of the movie right away, which is, are you out of your mind? No, just out of bullets.
That's where
I wrote that down.
I did too. Because that's where I jumped on board.
Yeah.
That's where I was like, yep, I'm in.
Yeah, totally.
That's a good line.
I stopped taking notes. I'm like, this is going to just drive itself.
Yeah.
So he gets tossed in jail. He's in jail with Kalunda and a friend who's dying. He offers them some liquor. And then Emmett Walsh gets tossed into this jail cell.
Yeah, he gets tossed into the jail cell and starts swearing until the end of the movie.
Yes,
Getting fat on scenery.
Oh, man. I love him in this movie.
Oh, absolutely. I'm a huge Emmett Walsh fan anyway. I love him in everything. But in this movie, man, he fucking fully... I'm American! I'm a fucking American! That is his character.
Outstanding.
Yeah,
big fan of all that, and he is not trusting of he's not afraid of how big Dolph Lundgren is or how Russian he is. He's like, you stay on your fucking side of the cage. You got that?
Yeah.
Your fucking side.
Yeah. You fucking Rusky.
Does he call him Boris there or?
Oh, I
comes up with something. Yeah. Like that. But yeah, no, it's pretty awesome. Yeah. He's like, I'm American, and there's one thing I hate. It's communists.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Very clear lines drawn in this movie as to who the good and the bad guys are.
I also thought that Kurt Russell would have been great in that role.
Oh, yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah, been good.
Yep.
Just like reprising, like, is he Tango or is he Cash?
He's Cash. He's Cash. Gabriel Cash.
Yeah,
the cowboy. Yeah, absolutely. He would have been a fine choice for this.
Perfect.
Yeah. Oh, boy. Now I really want to see that movie.
Yeah, I'm just... laying that movie in my head.
I was just spitballing when I was watching it.
Yeah. Look, shoehorning Kurt Russell into most movies is a good idea.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Uh-huh. Yentl, he would have been great.
Help. Wonderful. All the roles.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Everybody. Just a one-man production of Yentl. by Kurt Russell. It's pretty good.
He directed it, too, by Kurt Russell.
Yeah, you get John Carpenter to direct it.
Oh, yeah, right.
John Carpenter's Yentl. Very good. That's soundtrack's gonna be dope.
Yeah.
Brian James, the late great, who's also in Tango and Cash.
Boy, does he ever keep showing up in our shitty movies?
Yeah. Doing accents.
Emmett Walsh and that guy both in Blade Runner.
That's right.
Yeah, right.
Which is awesome.
Yeah. Totally.
Work together.
Yeah.
Tortoise? Right? Yeah. I started thinking about Blade Runner. I want to watch that again now.
When does the first, like, because a chase scene happens soon.
Yeah, so Brian James comes into the cell.
Yeah.
There's a fight.
Which is awesome.
Yeah. There's a fight set to Little Richard.
Mm-hmm.
Definitely.
In the jail cell.
Yep, I got that. Little Richard, number two.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Kalunda has Brian James around the neck. Brian James is yelling at a soldier, shoot him. The soldier shoots Brian James in the arm instead, which enrages him. Then he gets a gun, and he's about to shoot Kalunda because he's like, you know what? Maybe it's going to be a private execution.
Yeah.
Because it was going to be public. I don't know. I was like, well, I see.
That was a nice line.
I hear you.
Yeah.
No. And then Dolph Lundgren kicks the gun out of his hands, then kicks him in the face. Pretty sweet kicks.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He's a big guy. He's like 6'5".
He's so good at kicking and punching.
He's very good at kicking for such a large man.
Yeah.
It doesn't look awkward.
He's nimble.
Yeah, very, you know. And playing a Russian again. He's not Russian.
Yeah.
This is just... I think he's...
Or a Swede.
I think he's a Swede.
Lundgren.
Lundgren. Anyway, so then he's like, let's get the fuck out of here. Well, he doesn't swear, but they get out of there. Now the big breakout happens, and he's just beating the shit out of people and dragging them out there.
Yeah.
They get into the back of a truck, and they think they're home free.
There's another cool gun.
There is another cool gun.
There's a cool fight. Dolph gets like a... really neat, like AK-47 with a giant bayonet on the end.
Yeah, sweet looking gun.
That's pretty awesome.
They do good reveals on guns in this movie. There's a couple of pretty solid ones.
Yeah.
So they get in the back of a truck, like, we're going to be home free. But then, as they go through a checkpoint, this guy's like, hold on, there's passengers for this truck. And then shit goes off for like 15 minutes of crazy action.
It was a great car chase.
Oh my God. And it is, of course, set to the music of Little Richard.
Sure.
Number three. That's pretty heavy.
Pretty nice.
My notes for this are smash, bang, bang, kaboom.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Is how it goes.
Repeat.
For a very long time.
But to great effect.
Oh, yeah. They did a perfect job of it.
Yeah. No, the thing about this movie and Joseph Zito as a director, I believe he did, so he did Invasion USA, he did this, but he kind of was a guy who jumped from genre to genre. He did a couple slashers, did a couple action movies, and I don't think he did a lot else.
Yeah.
But I wish there was more Joseph Zito action movies, because that he did... He takes this kind of like, because in Invasion USA, you get that kind of slasher movie like darkness in this movie that's so pro-America, where it's like lingering on bodies for longer than most action movies would.
And then
in this movie, you just get that sort of like the carnage is pretty like turned up to 11. You're holy shit.
Well,
like
he
the
knows.
Cars are blown up and fight. You're just like, ah, yes.
This guy knows action, because Invasion USA ends with a bazooka quick draw. Indoors.
Yeah,
that's amazing.
Yeah.
So,
yeah, like, it predates the True Lies.
This
like, throw somebody out a window and then have them explode outside the window.
Yeah.
For a non-horror movie, just like this just bad guy just gets chucked out a window and blows up.
Yeah.
By a bazooka.
What's he doing now?
I don't know.
More red.
What's the last thing that he did?
I'll check. Yeah. But I do know. Yeah, he didn't do a ton of movies, but the ones that he did are pretty cool.
Yeah, and this chase escape scene has multiple trucks, cars blowing up.
Yeah,
motorcycles with sidecars.
Yep.
Those blowing up,
flipping around
all over the place. People, everyone's changing vehicles.
Dolph climbs onto the truck twice.
Yeah.
It's me. He goes up top. He gets in. Just points to the door. The other fella jumps out.
Yeah,
driving for a while. Walsh gets in. Walsh kicks Dolph out.
Yep.
Dolph gets on a motorcycle, beats two people up, drops back on the truck. He gets shot. Things are blowing up. It was awesome.
Amazing.
I know.
They're driving that truck through other trucks. So many things explode.
Yeah.
What a wonderful time.
And Dolph did a couple of his own stunts there.
I think
he really did jump off that motorcycle, even if it was all like set. They were going fast.
Pretty nice, yeah.
Yeah, totally.
And like getting back up onto the truck, too. Yeah. Doing
he
that.
Does.
He's down.
Like, obviously... obviously, Zito didn't, like, write this or anything. But, like, when he does movies, it seems kind of like... One of the action scenes in this or Invasion USA would be the centerpiece of sort of a standard 80s action movie.
Yeah.
Where, like, it's leading up to and then getting down from these amazing scenes.
Yeah.
But this stuff is just like, no, every scene I do is just going to be straight up cars getting tossed.
Yeah.
And, like,
I mean, this could be like the climax to any.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
I watched this movie last night.
Yeah.
And then this morning, I watched that opening action sequence and the closing one again.
Awesome.
The closing one.
The closing one is fucking bananas.
I thought of Gorman when I was watching it.
I love it. He sent me a Facebook message after he watched it. Matt was just like, you will like this movie.
Put on your woo face, baby.
Yeah.
Woo. Oh, God. So they survive the escape. They get out. They get to Kalunda's people, and they want to shoot Dolph Lundgren, but they're like, no, he helped us.
Walsh still doesn't trust him.
He does not, because he's a fucking commie.
I love, like, you mentioned that before, but
bastard.
I love that fucking Emmett Walsh is, like, he doesn't age. He was always about 80.
Yeah.
And he's always drunk, whether his character is or not. But
he does look like shit in this.
But, like, he's so not afraid of the giant Russian man who could just squeeze his little head.
Yeah.
But he's just so like, ah, fuck you, you fucking giant Russian. Just more of you to fucking hate. he's a scrappy little guy.
Oh, when do they have their little overnight camp out? Is that around
Shortly
now?
After that, yeah, because they escaped.
And that scene's funny, too, because it's so clearly on a soundstage, because Emmett Walsh is shouting so much, you can hear the echo of it being inside somewhere.
Yeah.
It sounds really weird, but I was like, yeah, right on, fucking yeah. And that's where his whole fucking thing, he's like, I would just love to be at fucking home eating a fucking cheeseburger, drinking a fucking beer.
Yeah.
Fucking A.
People at home will probably think that we're like embellishing on all the swearing, but like
he's going to bring it up then too. He's like, you Americans swear a lot. And he's like, fuck yeah, we do. We got something called the fucking freedom of fucking speech.
Yeah.
I live in America.
Yeah.
Dick balls. Say whatever we want.
I know all of them. I can go all night with this thing. I know all the major
fucking
swears.
Fucking A. That's his big one, the fucking A.
I got Joseph Zito's IMDb up. So he did Abduction and Blood Rage in the late 70s.
Is that one
they
title?
Both sound good.
No, two. Yeah.
Abduction and Blood Rage.
75
Abduction. I think we played a show with those guys in Peterborough.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Abduction and Blood Rage, the metal bands. No, well, his first like super big movie that I knew of was The Prowler in 81 with Tom Savini effects.
Oh,
crazy.
He did The Prowler.
Yeah.
That's a fucking cool movie.
Yeah, and then he did Missing in Action in 84.
Awesome.
Then he did Friday the 13th, The Final Chapter in 84.
Oh,
which
that's
is
a good one.
Yeah, I don't
the
mind
climax
that one.
Of that movie is pretty dark.
Around the time, though, that they were really starting to cut down on the gore, and I feel like his was one of the ones where they were like, that's too much, because The Prowler was pretty gory, too. And Invasion USA, Red Scorpion in 88/89, then nothing until 2000, Delta Force won The Lost Patrol, and Power Play in 2003. So pretty much after Red Scorpion, it was like
I've
perfected the action movie.
Yeah.
I know.
There is a Red Scorpion 2.
Yeah, in
95 or something.
Yeah.
With Dolph?
Yeah.
No, I think it's John Savage is the main character.
What?
He's one of them. Yeah.
But
he's
it's also
no Red
weird.
Scorpion.
It's weird. Like,
I don't know if he's supposed to be the Red Scorpion or.
Why would you wait that long, though, too?
Yeah.
Like, in
and
94,
why would you
were
not
people
get
like.
Dolph
Red
and
Scorpion.
It's not
Red
like he was
Scorpion.
Super
Apparently
busy.
Apparently, it got like it's quite the big, like, cult film.
Yeah.
When it came out, the critics didn't think very much of it.
No.
But, like, yeah, it was, like, really popular with, like, the action nerds.
Yeah, absolutely.
What, the sequel was?
No, this.
No, this
oh, this
was.
Yeah. Like
they must have played it, like, on TV all the time.
Yeah, absolutely. And I get why you would just watch this over and over when it was on cable or something like that. Just like, oh. Like,
no, this is like
Red
a
Scorpion gold
mine of cable. Because if they're editing it a little for time, they're probably going to cut out, like, some of the slower parts. Mm-hmm. And then, like, there's no nudity in it, right?
Right.
Yeah, there's
so
no
the rest
sex.
Of it is just like
there's
censoring
no romance
the words.
Of any kind. So, is there a woman in this movie?
I don't
there's
think so.
One woman
there
in
is,
the movie.
She's the she's documenting when he's getting tortured.
Oh yes.
That's it.
Oh her. Right. No, there's also a woman who there's like various women in the villages.
Yeah,
but
yeah,
we're
yeah,
all
yeah,
basically.
Yeah,
yeah
right.
Yeah.
Yeah. There's so, one woman. It's what like the buddy is like his wife or.
Yeah, she just runs up and hugs
some type
him
of
and just
yeah.
like looks disapprovingly
yeah.
at Dolph. Yeah.
Yeah. I feel like this is something that if you had stumbled upon it on HBO and even in its uncut form and taped it, you're just like, no, this is my favorite tape now. Like, this is one of the 10 movies I have at home. I'm watching this all the time.
It's like I'm 14 and this is amazing.
Yeah,
pretty good. They and when they're at the village, people are very suspect of Dolph, so they're gonna lock him up, even though Kalunda is kind of trusting him and liking him now. So they lock him up.
They go to Kalunda's village. The village is wiped out and you see the Hind gunship for the first time.
Yeah, right, that's right.
I brought my Janes.
This is amazing.
Aircraft recognition guide.
Sweet.
No, he's got the book. Aircraft recognition guide.
Oh, wow.
I folded the page down. So the Hind gunship, it's a pretty badass machine. When it was first appeared in 1974, the Hind had a large glasshouse cockpit in place of the familiar tandem arrangement. The ability to carry troops in the central compartment is unique among gunships. On major versions,
I noticed.
The Mi-24, the MiG-24P has a side-mounted 23mm cannon, which is pretty big. The M-35 is a twin 23mm gun turret.
Badass.
Yeah, so it can. Yeah. The warload is 24,000 kilograms of bombs.
Fuck yeah.
Jesus.
Yeah, and so they were using this in Angola, the M-24.
Yeah. That's like one of the things too about this movie is that there's multiple moments. Yeah. Oh yeah, I'll look at that.
I think I've asked you this before, but where did you get this book?
The Gettin' Place.
Yeah. I hear they're pretty good.
The bookstore. No, well, the thing about this movie is that it's one of those movies where it is kind of like it could have just been about one special weapon because there's more than one thing in this movie where they're like, take note of this because it's a very special type of aircraft or tank or whatever. But and then that pays off later when they use it, and you're kind of waiting around for these things to be used. But they do it more than once. There's a helicopter. There's a tank at the end.
Super
and
cool
like,
helicopter.
Yeah,
too,
and
so.
There's a super amazing like machine gun that gets reintroduced. The other thing that's like weird about this movie, but maybe it's like a bit of a callback. So like you know the 1980s, super right wing guys.
Yeah,
and just like loving. like nerding out on like all the different like weapons and guns and that. But they love all the Russian stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, which is kind of weird. So maybe it's like, you know, everyone's father who just watches documentaries about Nazis. And it's like every single, like, you know,
if you grew
German
up in the Cold War,
And now if you grew up in the Cold War, it's all the Russians.
And there's
stuff.
A lot of movies about Russians, you know, having a heart of gold.
Yeah, Ruskies.
And switching sides. Ruskies? Yeah.
I loved that movie when I was a kid.
Ruskies? Yeah.
Oh, but America loves that story of the bad guy becoming a good guy by becoming an American.
Yeah, well, right. I mean, when
for Red October.
That's the Yakov Smirnov story.
Yeah.
And America loves Yakov Smirnov.
No, but it was also, there was that kind of, like, pushback on the, like, they've been the villains, you know, like, how many movies were they the villain? Yeah. So there's obviously going to be some small sect of people that are like, come on, guys, let's make a movie where it's not about, like, they're evil. Maybe how about we're all human beings and we'll do a story about that? Like,
how about that?
Yeah. Well, yeah, like, I mean, I think it's pretty incredible that they made, like, this ultra-American, you know, flag-waving movie in Africa.
Yeah.
So it takes place during basically like it's called like the Angolan Bush War or the South African like border war that happened between 66 and 89.
Yeah.
I think.
Yeah.
And you follow a Russian through the entire thing and it's still like freedom.
Yeah.
America.
Right.
There's only one American character in the whole movie.
And he doesn't even fight.
No. He's sort of superfluous other than to make it okay for Americans to watch it.
Maybe that's it.
And
just like he's a very colorful character.
Loves the swearing.
Yeah, they actually got stranded.
I love his swearing.
Yeah, they got stranded there while they were making this in Johannesburg.
Oh, really?
Yeah, because the movie went over budget because it was originally going to be like $8 million, but then they got like stranded and they were waiting for like money to be cleared, and then Warner Brothers actually like pulled out and were like, whoa, like because they had a back end deal or something where they could pull out at any time.
Because
like,
apartheid's still going on.
Yeah,
right.
So it was kind of like, oh, super awesome, shit's going down. We're going to pull out or whatever. Yeah, and they kind of like were stranded there waiting for the money to come through to finish, and it ended up going over budget and shit. I mean, I'm sure they spent more money on explosions too and stuff.
Well, you get to really, you know, let's really work out these explosion sequences.
Yeah, while we're
get
stranded,
to dream bigger.
They're just like, we're stranded here. We don't have any money, but we still have the camera. Explosions. Yeah, let's just film Dolph Lundgren walking around or lying down on the sand for 20 minutes. We'll pad the movie with that.
Yeah.
And in his short pants or his underpants.
Oh, boy.
He has beautiful legs.
Yeah, I got to talk about those shorts eventually. We'll get there. He's still wearing pants at this point.
Yeah.
Oh, and then there's
he sounded so disdainful. He's still wearing pants at this point.
But he's got glorious long legs like a gazelle.
His whole body, he looks like an action figure.
He does. I was looking at him, and I kept thinking, damn, they should have made an X-Men movie in 1990, and he could have been Colossus, and it would have been amazing.
Yeah. Oh, that's totally true.
You know? He's almost like, you can't be that big. They really didn't. They just would have painted him, and it would have been...
It would have been awful.
Yeah.
That was around the time period where I think it was James Cameron, was like really high on the idea of having Bob Hoskins play Wolverine.
That would have... That'd be different.
It's like, you know, you're not wrong. He's short and hairy.
Yeah.
James Cameron, like,
and he's a very good actor.
Only makes hits.
Yeah, right?
So listen to him. Yeah. If you can't get Bob Hoskins, get Ed Asner. He's a tiny, hairy little man. Do it.
But yeah, Dolph Lundgren is, he's almost, you almost can't believe how big he is.
Yeah.
Is this after Rocky IV?
Yeah. Rocky IV is... 84 or 85.
I think so.
Yeah. He's very well known now, and most people, America, just thinks he's Russian. Just like they didn't know what Schwarzenegger was forever.
Yeah.
What's Austria?
What did you say the name of the helicopter was? It was the Hind. Because on IMDb trivia, shots fired from this trivia section, it says the Hind in reality is a Sikorsky S-62 modified to look like a gunship.
It doesn't look like that.
Doesn't?
Well, I want my money back then.
Yeah. Also used in Braddock, Missing in Action 3.
Well, it was probably the gunship that was available to
you.
Right.
Yeah.
You do what you can. when you're stranded in Africa.
In Africa.
they did a good job on the helicopter, though.
Yeah. I enjoyed it. I didn't even have an aircraft guide.
No.
Yeah, that thing crested the horizon a couple times.
You never
want to
leave home without
Well, what if something was to happen where you need to know, like, yeah.
You never know.
What if an air show springs up around you?
Yeah.
And someone's like, what's that helicopter?
It's an SR-71 Blackbird. Obviously.
You're welcome. Enjoy the show.
I was actually,
There's a great line there. You know, when they're walking through the village. The Americans, like, you know, everything breaks down in Africa. Delivered with gravitas.
Boy.
I didn't exactly know what that meant.
Yeah, so many
It sounded cool, though.
Yeah, it did. Like,
From a guy that's seen it all.
I assume it was, like, a vague sort of political commentary
like 100 army dads were, like, nodding their heads.
No,
like,
good call, man.
You see son or whatever, like.
So... is this the point where they lock Dolph up?
I don't know.
Kind of like lightly. They're like,
they walk to the next village.
Yeah.
Where the main target is.
Right.
Yeah.
And he's in a cell.
Sweater vest.
And see, this is what I liked, where he's in there and he's clearly had some relationship building time now with the swearing American and Kalunda.
Oh, there's another cool gunfight that we missed.
Is there another
gunfight? There's a lot of gunfights.
Yeah. So, like, when they leave.
Oh, when they're
village.
In the water.
Yeah.
When they're all going to skinny dip together or whatever. And that gets interrupted.
Dolph takes a shirt off, shoots a bunch of people, gets a cool gun.
Yeah, I forgot about that gunfight.
Well, then, Emmett Walsh the whole time is somehow underwater forever.
Right. Yeah, because
at the end of the fight, he just comes out of the water like, I was under all along.
The Russians attack, and then, like, the rebels fight them off.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And that's how they get to the village.
Right. Yeah.
It's the nice transition.
That's
there.
Right. Okay. And they want to kill Dolph, but Kalunda's like, no.
Yeah.
He's cool, man.
Yeah, he's cool. But they got to lock him up anyway because people are freaking out.
Yeah. And at this point, as a viewer, you still don't know if his sort of like goodness is.
Yeah, because he's having a good time with them. He saved them so many times. Like, there's a little bit of like
inner conflict is beginning.
Yeah, and it happens while he's now. This is again what I like. They don't let him just like now. He's like, oh, I'll just forget my country and my training, because he's in the cell and he starts reciting the oath he's taken to country and to military over and over and over and over, and he starts punching the wall, dents it up real good. And I was like, that's cool. Like, I like that he's struggling with it, but he's gonna do what he's been programmed and trained to do.
Yeah.
And then, it's a pretty sweet line, too, where he punches the thing over and over, and then he calls the guard over. He's like, what's the problem? And he sticks his hand out with his finger, and he's like, do you have a Band-Aid? It's pretty lovely.
Yeah.
And then he grabs him by the neck and smashes him into the bars over and over.
And then lifts him up.
Yeah.
And takes the keys out.
That's right.
Lifts him up with one arm. Yeah. It's pretty amazing.
His busted hand.
Yeah. He's a
One does.
That's what I usually do. He's a fucking superhero. It's crazy.
Yeah. And so he gets out. He's sneaking around.
He's going to assassinate.
And he's going to take out the target. He's got a knife. He's about to attack. You know, he's creeping up on the bed. Then all the lights come on and they knew he was going to do it.
Yeah. Yeah.
There's a cool knife spin in between.
He's
got it. And then he flips it over.
Yep.
Yeah.
That's a nice knife trick.
Sweet.
Yep.
Didn't have to do that.
Nope.
It's like, I appreciate that.
As a viewer.
It's nice.
Yeah.
That kind of effort is wonderful. We like to show some initiative in your knife murdering.
Yeah.
So the lights come on. They've got him. He's busted. And they're like, listen, we're not going to kill you because your own people are going to do far worse to you than we ever could.
Yeah, which seems like a little bit of a cop-out.
Yeah.
I'm just like, no, kill him.
Yeah,
you should
probably
kill
the assassin.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The giant assassin.
Yeah.
With sweet knife tricks.
Yeah.
Leave him in the desert in disgrace.
Yeah.
This is the first time I think he's face down in the desert.
Yeah, because M. Emmett Walsh is like, fuck you, commie, I knew it. Smacks him with a gun.
Yeah.
And they leave him face down in the dirt, where he's found by the Russians, who, of course, treat him like shit.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, don't they? They bring him. They fucking chain him up.
They chain him the fuck up. This is where we get our only real lady in the movie.
Yeah,
yeah.
And our only homoerotic torture scene.
It's true. Does she say anything? I think she just shakes her head.
She just sits there and tries not to cry. I think the whole time she looks like a very sad lady.
Yeah. So he's going to be tortured by his own people.
Yeah.
Because they want to know everything.
Yeah, that they're also they're also concerned if he blabbed any of like the plot or whatever, right?
Right.
Yeah,
right.
Yeah. So it's like because the movie thing that's going on here is
did you talk about this movie?
Don't tell them about Red Scorpion.
We are so over budget. Yeah, we can't handle this kind of shit.
Is that, you know, the Russians are in charge. They stripped him of his he's like the Spetsa or the whatever special forces. Yep. He's like, you're not special forces anymore. What did you tell the Cubans?
Boy, that broke his, like, that broke his Russian heart.
I'm not really, they didn't tell them anything.
Yeah.
And he's like, okay. So then he leaves. And then the Cubans come in. They're like, I wanted to know everything before we shoot you.
Yeah.
And then they torture him with the knitting needles.
Yeah.
It's and I think I wrote down that it was pretty intense.
Yeah. Slowly the guy has all these needles and he slowly jams one into his bicep.
Yeah, like right through.
Right through.
Like but he keeps going like
that would have smarted something fierce.
No fun.
He makes these noises while he's doing it.
Yeah.
He's like, I've only ever needed 4 of these and I've got 40, and then he shoves one through his, like, what's this thing here? A lat? Is that what we're calling that?
On your shoulder?
Yeah.
That's where, like, Spock goes and uses
The Spock muscle. Yeah. He shoves a thing and he's like, ooh.
It's a trap.
Traps
up there.
Traps?
Traps, I think.
Sure.
Yeah.
Well, I thought you were saying his muscle was a trap.
Yeah, it's a trap.
Yeah. It's a trap. Don't you think it there? It's a trap.
Is that muscle a trap? That's my trick muscle.
Gotcha.
Yeah.
Yeah. And he does, though.
He chokes the guy out.
Yeah.
With the chains.
Yeah.
And then
rips him out of the wall. He is a fucking super. And the girl who's sitting there is just like, oh.
Yeah. And he's like, tell the people what you saw here. And she's
I will. It was terrifying. Yeah. And they're probably going to ask me what happened here.
So I was going to tell them anyway. The questions would have started when they saw that you aren't here.
Yeah. Yeah. This guy's dead and the chains aren't in the wall anymore.
Yeah.
Oh, right.
Those aren't free chains.
You're going to pay for those.
Should have really used like the locks in in the brick.
Yeah.
So you can't just like tack it into the mortar.
No, you should really anchor those things.
Yeah, you should anchor
these chains
properly.
Are purely decorative.
just here for effect.
Yeah.
Then he gets the fuck out and he's kind of,
passes out in the desert.
Yeah, gotta go sleep in the desert. Gonna sleep off
which
all that.
Which is where
chain
the
dragon.
Movie starts. Now
things slow the fuck down.
Yeah. For a good, like, 20
long time.
Minutes,
well, he's really gotta, you know, take his time with,
He gets bitten by the scorpion here.
That's right. Yeah. He does get bitten because he wakes up and
the
there's a bunch of scorpions
red scorpion.
On his back. One bites him and then he goes to sleep.
Mm hmm.
And then he's found by a...
the Bushman.
Bushman, sure.
Yeah, and being bitten by the scorpion leaves sort of like a marking on him.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. A red mark.
Yeah.
And then he just... Yeah, there's the Bushman takes him back, and Dolph is tripping balls.
Yeah. And they make him drink, like, scorpion blood.
Yeah,
which
yeah.
makes him pass out in the dirt again.
Yeah.
No, that's
But
that's
then they
after.
Give him a tattoo, which that's- is like... Yeah, right on. These guys drugged me and gave me a tattoo.
Yeah, it was a rite of passage.
I'm down with you, fellas.
Yeah. Luckily, it's a super sweet tattoo.
Pretty sweet
tattoo.
It's a
pretty good tattoo.
Yeah,
it's
good.
Not even really a tattoo. It's
no,
more
no,
like
it's
a scarring.
Scarring. Yeah.
It just takes like a razor blade.
Yeah.
Which
carves a scorpion into his chest.
If I wasn't such a pussy,
hand.
I would totally get that thing. Or I guess, I don't know, maybe I'd have to train with a shaman in the desert for a while.
No, you just drink the scorpion juice.
Is that all you have to do?
Trip balls.
Oh, okay.
And then it's fine.
Yeah,
I could do that.
I thought you were going to say, if I wasn't such a pussy, I'd carve a scorpion into Dolph Lundgren, too.
No, I have, actually.
He loves it.
It was that night in 97.
Yeah. He dared me to do it. I'm like, fuck you, Dolph.
Yeah.
So...
Fuck you, Dolph. I don't care if you dated Grace Jones.
Yeah.
Well, I was a little jealous. That's why I did it.
Now let's whiz through all of this for everyone. So there's a lot of time spent in the desert.
He sleeps
while
in the
that
desert
goes
for
on.
A while.
There's another attack on the village, and the target, whose name the sweater vest. Saves the child, but gets shot.
Sweater vest, Black Mombazo.
Yeah, he gets shot, and he is not in good shape. Well, that's the other thing that's going on. While Dolph Lundgren's having his spirit quest in the desert, and so he's got the carving on his chest. He has a moment where he grabs his dog tags and he tears him off and just throws him in the desert.
Yeah,
that's right.
Yeah, it's very emotional. And then he tells, and he's got his buddy, his Bushman, he's been hanging out with. They can't really communicate with each other, but the Bushman like makes him some flip flops.
Yeah. Oh yeah.
I remember when he makes some flip flops.
Because yeah, he's just now. Got his like feet bandaged up like in rags. Yeah. So he yeah, takes yeah. them off. He's like, I made you these.
Yeah,
he's
I made
like,
you oh, some thanks, fucking man, sweet flip flops. Yeah.
Yeah.
I was like, they do. They were totally flip flops. I'm like, is that authentic? Is that
it's Bushman artistry.
Yeah, fucking yeah. Right on. And he knows what he has to do. So he's got a fucking sweet spear now. His dope scorpion scar.
Yep.
And he's gonna go back. To find Kalunda and right his wrongs.
I was thinking like during this part here, it's like, you know, was the Red Scorpion because his sunburn was so fucking bad? Because he's like just wandering around like in his underpants.
Yeah.
And like he is like porcelain white.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And now he is okay, now he's in shorts now. And he's wearing
finally
in shorts.
This These is where are, the movie starts. And like, as far as they're I'm
like,
concerned.
They're cutoffs, like cutoff pants to the point where like I feel like the pocket
is coming
hanging out a bit. Like they are very short cutoffs.
He's wearing a couple of he's wearing some Daisy
Dukes. Pretty short even for 1989 standards. And now he's in great shape. He has wonderfully muscular legs, but tall men cannot wear short shorts and expect to look menacing.
No, he looks more beautiful than badass.
Because he's still got the big army boots on, too.
Yeah.
So it's a weird look for a hero.
No, I thought that he still had the flip-flops on.
No, he gets some boots. Eventually, he's in boots and the shorts.
Yeah. Towards and
it's kind of rude. His shaman friend went to the trouble to make him some flippy floppies.
Yeah. Can't go to battle in flippy flops.
Well, listen, you can't.
Well, it's true. Anyway, I was just like, the shorts are too short.
Yeah.
you got to be within, you know, a couple inches of the knee if you're a big, big, tall man.
Yeah.
Unless you're playing basketball in the 1970s. So he comes back to Kalunda's village. He's got the spear. They're like, you again?
Where'd you get that spear?
But Sweater Vest is dying, and he's like, no, come here. Get over here. You, come on. Nice flip-flops.
Yeah.
Sweet shorts. Let's have a rap sesh.
Yeah. I can't be mad at you in those shorts.
I know. Look at it. How do you get your thighs that muscular?
Yeah.
Before I die. Somebody tell. He's on his deathbed, and so they have, like, a moment.
Yeah.
Right, and he's... I don't know. Did he know he was going to come back? Just like he knew he was going to try and kill him?
Yeah, probably.
Walsh still doesn't trust him.
No.
Freaks out.
Fuck no. He's like, this fucking guy.
Yeah.
This red scorpion motherfucker.
Yeah. Nice scorpion tattoo. I still see you,
Kami. I still see through you.
Yeah. What happens here? So they have a little chit-chat. So he dies. And I guess, is this like where Kalunda's like, let's just go home and wash ourselves in defeat or whatever he says. And Dolph Lundgren
and
instead,
Dolph Lundgren's like, wash yourselves hands in your feet. What are you talking about?
That's a weird thing to say.
Dolph Lundgren gets his spear, you know, the guy brings over a spear and he takes the gun and he's like, let's go kick some ass.
Yeah.
I thought like the funeral pyre was actually a very nice ceremony.
It was nice. Again, nice. This movie is kind of bananas, but at the same time, it was like, you're trying to really make a movie here.
Yeah.
And I'm on board for it.
Totally.
I like the effort. Like they
I do.
Really
I appreciated the effort.
None of like
it might have been a little boring at times, but
it didn't emotionally resonate with me.
No.
At all. But I like that they tried. I'm like, you're really going for this. It's nice.
Absolutely.
Like Greg was saying, like they put the effort into him not just being like, oh, I'm a Russian. Okay, I'm good now.
Yeah.
They had the balls to be like, well, we'll have him spend 25 minutes alone in the desert, like, and get bit by a scorpion. Because fuck that, we're stopping the movie. Stuff, I don't care.
So then he's like, let's kick some ass. And it's nighttime, and it just jumps to them attacking.
Yeah. Straight up Gorman time.
Yeah.
I think someone says that in the movie.
Yeah,
it's straight up Gorman time.
We're going to do a hard edit jump cut to Gorman time. And now he's got like a bandit. Like here's where he's running. This is where I'm talking about the shorts. Because he's running into battle. He's got war paint on his face. He's got this sweet like do-rag on his head. This big machine gun. His arms are covered in war paint too, and like arms ripped off of this like kind of army shirt, and then the shorter shorts. Yeah. And, like, these don't. This isn't like
he
your
still
legs
kind
are,
of looks like a badass though.
A little bit.
He almost pulls it off.
Almost, but still, your legs are too long to be running around looking like this, buddy. Because it's, I don't know. It just bothered me aesthetically. I'm like, the shorts are too small, man.
Yeah.
You got to go with the full-on trousers. I don't care if it's hot.
Trousers or the guy, it's got to be down to the knee. Got to be. The legs are too long. Okay.
Is there any other action movies where like people
the guy
are
has
wearing
shorts?
Shorts
pants? Yeah, I don't know. Boxing movies.
No, like, you know, jungle fighting.
Oh, I feel like
movies.
Every jungle movie is with like torn denim shorts. Like,
I don't know.
Like Red Brown.
I feel
that's
like
all he wears.
I feel like you go with a tank top or no shirt, but always with the fatigue pants.
Exactly.
Down
that's
to the ankles. Always with pants.
I feel like the low budget shit.
Sometimes
though,
has like
the
pants
jean
get
shorts.
Blown apart or whatever.
Sure. You might get ripped
up. It's a low budget.
Pants,
they can't afford
like
no.
Pants.
Legs.
They just don't know.
Or like they might get ripped up into like Hulk pants, like when Hulk turns back into Banner pants.
Yeah.
But that's always at least down to the knee.
I feel
but
like Ted Pryor and Deadly Prey's got some like rip-offs.
Oh, Ted Pryor's running around in nothing but jean shorts, but that's Ted Pryor.
But the, I mean, but like the influx of like not.
He's in a
Hollywood
world all
movies.
His own. Yeah. Rambo always had pants on.
Yeah.
But I just feel like all the jungle low budget movies were all just like, we don't know anything about military. They weren't shorts. I don't know. Like,
well, I mean, you know, I get it.
Yeah.
And maybe Dolph said, you know, fuck it. It's really hot here, guys. I'm wearing shorts. This is murder.
Well, so, what was he wearing earlier in the movie? Maybe he lost all of his pants.
Well, it looks like he has. They are like, I think he ripped them off while he was snapping in the desert.
Yeah. So he's got to improvise, man.
Yeah, fair enough. Maybe that's what he made those flip flops out of.
Yeah.
Just take my pants. Turned him into shorts
shoes.
And flip-flops.
Yeah.
All right. So this epic final battle is pretty epic.
It's the best.
Yeah.
The movie becomes the best again. This movie is straight up the best for 80% of it.
Yeah. But this is, I was like, that opening action sequence is pretty outstanding.
Yeah, how
are they
going to
top it? Well, they do.
Well, they start with like giant explosion.
Everything explodes. Right, I don't even know why or what.
Yeah.
Cars, houses, and stuntmen who are very close to the explosions.
Yeah.
Gotta like that. Dolph Lundgren does a deke out with a tank.
Yep.
Dodge,
a tank.
Dodges tank shell.
Yeah. that's a note you write down.
Yeah.
A tank aims at him. He looks at it. He stops what he's doing. He's like, and stares at the tank. And then the tank fires. And he's like,
yeah. Just jumped out of the way.
That's like a Steve Martin bullet dodge.
Yeah.
Yeah. Pretty good.
It's great.
All kinds of things are blowing up. Then Emmett Walsh
up,
he arrives and he's like, I thought you might need some fucking help from a fucking American, you fucking piece of shit. Look, and we're fucking friends now.
Yeah.
Guess what? I fucking love you now. Yeah. I'm going to fucking shoot some fucking whoever these guys are.
Yeah. And then his like Jeep he's in crashes or whatever, gets shot at by a tank.
Yeah. The tank hits it.
The tank hits it. And it's like front wheel is in a ditch. And Dolph Lundgren opens the door and he's like, hey, buddy, what's up? And he's like, fucking holy fuck. And but there's a gun on the back of this truck, but they can't aim it if the front wheel is in this ditch.
Yeah.
So Dolph pushes his ass into the fucking wheel hub or whatever and grabs the front of the truck to lift it up.
He just lifts it.
And lifts it out of this thing to aim it. But the whole time I'm thinking, hey, Emmett Walsh, why don't you get out of the fucking truck.
Yeah, get your fat ass out of the fucking truck.
It's already super heavy. It's a truck.
Yeah.
And he's watching him do it. I was like, is he in the truck still? And it cuts to him in the truck like, well, that looks heavy. You're in it. Like,
you'll never do it.
Adding an extra 200 pounds is not helping this man lift this truck. Like, just, even if you're injured, roll out of the truck.
Yeah.
Get out
of the truck.
Get out and give him a fucking hand.
Seriously.
Too,
just watching him pick this
fat,
fucking
drunk
truck.
American.
Listen, you guys, he's fucking American. He doesn't have to do anything.
Fucking Americans don't pick up fucking trucks.
No.
They sit in them.
But he picks it up with the fat guy inside all together and aims the big gun. Another pretty sweet gun here.
Yep.
Aims it at the tank and blows it the fuck up.
Yep.
Pretty awesome. Then he's got to run around. He runs inside.
Blows up tank.
Tank is blown up. Everything is blowing up all over the fucking place. Then he's inside and he's kicking people and shooting people and hitting people with guns and punching them in the face.
It was a great knife throw.
Yeah.
Pretty sweet. Like, or machete, really.
Yeah.
Center of the chest.
Yeah.
He throws a machete so hard that it pierces
the sternum.
Breastbone, sternum right here.
That's right.
Fucking halfway through a man.
Yeah.
Amazing.
Very good.
I can't do that.
Now he's inside and he's trying to find, he wants to find his commanding officer, the Russian commanding officer, and the Cuban one.
Yeah.
Because he's pissed at both of them. He finds the Cuban one first. And you get a sweet reveal on a gun again.
Yeah.
He walks into a room and there's a gun like, on display.
Yep, just waiting for him.
That is an enormous, super cool gun, which he grabs. And then he has a showdown with the Cuban guy. And the Cuban guy's got a really big grenade. And he's like, this is a really big grenade.
Yeah.
Even if you shoot me and I fall on the ground, it'll still blow up.
Blow everybody up.
Yeah, we're all going to die. And Dolph Lundgren's response to this is, I'll just shoot your arm off. And then your hand will still be holding the grenade.
Yeah.
Everything's going to be fine.
Which fully works,
by the way. He is totally correct.
Yeah.
Yeah. That arm shoot off, I was like, yeah!
That was the best fucking thing.
It looked
amazing. And great. Like when they pan back to the arm holding the grenade, that's a good looking fake arm.
It looks good, too.
Yeah. Really nice.
Yeah,
there's
actually some like actually very nice cinematography.
Absolutely.
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
Some beautiful shots.
Yeah.
I mean, not just like the severed arm with the grenade in it, but like... Otherwise,
it's easy to make that look beautiful.
Yeah,
but yes, all in all, there's some lovely cinematography.
Engaging.
Yeah. Super duper nice.
Yeah. And at this point in the movie, so I watched this movie when I went home to visit my parents. And so, like, I was watching this alone at night. And I'm, like, fully, like, a bunch of beers in alone. and I did kind of get, like, dozy during the sort of the whole
spirit quest.
The fever dream
quest.
In the desert. Yeah.
But then when it came back and I had, like, had that spirit quest to have, like, two more beers, and it came back and I was like, is this happening?
Like, not only is Dolph a changed man, Gorman is too.
Yeah.
I was just like, I cannot believe what is happening at the end of this movie.
Dolph Lundgren is your spirit animal.
Yeah. Because I think I was sending you guys, I think I was sending Facebook messages out, and I was like, the list of my messages were like, this is the best movie ever. Holy shit, it's amazing. It's better than you would ever imagine. Then, oh, it got boring. Oh, man, it's still boring. And then, I can't believe it's this good again. Like... My expectations went down and then back up.
So the one-armed Cuban guy blows up.
Yeah. Because
he's crawling over one arm to his grenade, and he blows up with it. And then Dolph is outside. Now he tracks down the Russian commanding officer who's in behind.
Helicopter.
Yeah. And this gun, this super duper, I don't know what gun this is, but boy, is it powerful.
Yeah.
I don't know what it is. It looks like a Bren gun because it's got like the clip on the top.
Yeah.
And then it's got two barrels.
Two barrels.
So maybe
like
it shoots two at the same time. I don't quite understand how it works. Anyways, it's like it's pretty awesome.
It takes the helicopter down. This giant helicopter.
Yeah.
Down on the ground.
Great explosion.
Wonderful. Oh, yeah. Huge. Yeah.
From the
and so his commanding officer is in there and he's bleeding and he's like, you lied to me.
Yeah, yeah.
He's like, I gave you an order. That's what I did. And then there's, and he's like, he says, I am Spetsna. It's just not for you. Like, I don't know. Well, I think then you're not Spetsna.
Yeah, yeah.
That's the military. They're in charge of that shit. And then he's like, so, and just leaves it at that. And walks away.
Yeah, yeah.
Slowly, just walking away. But then the guy's reaching, he pulls out a gun, and he's slowly cocking it, and slowly pointing it. I'm like, Dolph, what are you going to do? And Dolph's just walking like, I did it, man. And then he just spins around. Just always the best way. Just like, I'm going to psych him out. I'm going to walk away like I'm walking away, but then I'm not walking away. I'm just going to turn around and shoot him with my super machine gun.
No, oh my God.
Because how can he know that he's pulling the gun? There's all kinds of noise of a helicopter burning. He's a good 20 feet away now, and he was just like, this is going to be hilarious.
Yeah. The only reason he knows is because he's Dolph Lundgren. He's the star of this film.
That's right. He fires at him, which then makes the helicopter explode once more.
Yeah.
Even bigger.
Yeah.
Which is just fucking great.
Amazing.
Great. Yeah.
So good.
And that's pretty much the end, except he finds Kalunda and he finds M. Emmett Walsh, and they're walking like, oh, man, we did it. Everybody's fucking dead.
Yeah.
We shot all this shit. And Dolph Lundgren goes... Fucking A.
Yeah.
Little Richard.
Little Richard. And then the entire credits is just the sounds of gunshots and explosions.
This was my...
Which was awesome.
Oh, my God.
I sent you guys that message, too. I was like...
I forgot that you said that, because it's been weeks since you mentioned that to me. And then I was watching, and I'm like... Oh my God.
Yeah. That was another, like, Dan Gorman's had a few beers.
Yeah.
And it was just like... Wait. There's music. It's like music over the credits, but then just... Pow, 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 and I'm just like, what? like this movie is, this movie is so full of action that it couldn't even contain itself to the movie that it was, and it had to spill over into the credits just in audio form.
Good God.
Yeah.
I don't even know.
I don't. I give this movie 4 explosions out of 5.
Yeah.
I would have given it 5 explosions out of 5 had it not had that slow
big dip
part.
In the middle.
Although,
it's kind of... Yeah.
How would you have handled it differently?
How would I have handled it differently?
Yeah, if you were in like the director's chair but still wanted to show that arc.
I would have had him go into the desert, and then the desert would have been full of mines. And then so things are constantly exploding, but he's still on a spirit quest. Yeah. I don't know.
Yeah.
Well, I'm just thinking, like, how would you tighten that up?
I think it's like... necessary. I do actually think it's necessary.
It has to be there. But there's maybe a way of having it be, I don't know, more entertaining. There's got to be something.
I find myself...
Maybe him and the guy have to, you know, fight a lion together.
Yeah.
He kills a pig.
He does kill a pig, but it's not a very threatening pig.
No, not really. I find myself torn between the like being impressed that the movie would do that and understanding that the story needs it and my like explosion lust for just like, but I wanted this because this almost reaches level of like commando style, just like go for it,
go for
broke action movie, straight up explosions the whole way through.
It is very much like a Schwarzenegger type vehicle.
Yeah.
Away his B period,
yeah,
like, raw deal commando,
totally.
Kind of but I did enjoy
it's
this
fun
movie. You know, it starts so huge and ends so huge.
Yeah,
that you really
doesn't even matter.
Forgive a lot of them.
Yeah, and it's not like it dips for the whole middle. It only dips for like that sort of into the third act.
And it's not the worst.
No,
I found the Bushman like an engaging guy. And, it was kind of neat.
It's
and,
cool because that the tribe fun. In the Bushman tribe or whatever is like a real one that had never been on film kind of
that's
thing.
Right.
Yeah, so it is kind of cool for when it takes that diversion. It's not boring, but
yeah.
Things don't explode.
No.
All they needed was one exploding line.
I would have had them like train Dolph by throwing grenades at him or something.
Something. there's a way to make it exciting. Who knows? There we are. I guess. What did we learn?
I learned that from now on, every time I go into a room that I need to be quiet, I'm just gonna burp extremely loud.
Fair enough.
And then everyone's gonna be quiet.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I don't know what I learned. I guess I learned. That if your movie is full of something, like explosions, then that's what has to happen during the credits.
Yes.
So if your movie is, I don't know,
full of sex, just sex sounds,
just sex,
over the okay,
right, yeah. If it's full of cars. Yeah, I think that's what you need. Those bullets and explosions with no music throughout the end credits.
Yeah,
amazing.
So good.
Yeah.
What did you learn,
Matt? What'd you learn?
I learned that Russians love early 50s American rock and roll.
This is true.
Or
are terrified by it.
Yeah,
I don't know. Oh, man. I did learn that I love that movie, though.
Yeah, it's great. I'm going to watch it again for sure. I feel like it'll be one to throw on. Yeah, I need to find that on VHS.
Yeah. You know what the listeners learned?
What?
Is that Casey's not here anymore.
Yeah, we can make fun of him.
I know.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
What a talented musician. I'm bad at making fun of people, you guys. I'm sorry.
Yeah, Casey had to slip out, so he's going to miss the second half of the episode. That's okay.
Well, we should have just, it would have been funny just to not even reference it and see, like.
I was thinking about doing that, but I'm like, that would be weird, wouldn't it?
I know. People would be like, what happened to Casey?
Yeah.
Yeah.
He's going to go rip some guitar solos.
Oh, my God. He's going to go shred, man.
Shred.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, what are the listeners, speaking of learning, going to learn about musically?
Well, we listened to an album. We listened to the first full-length album by the Canadian rock band The Tragically Hip.
Yeah.
Up to Here.
Up
Released
to Here.
February, it looks like. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, something like that. Anyway.
I think on the announcement, I spoke about not being super familiar with their albums.
Right.
Only with their singles and having grown up in a small town.
Sure.
In Ontario, they had like the one rock and roll station, The Wolf. And
they definitely played some hip.
They played some hip. It was the kind of like, we got to get some can rock. We got to get some Canadian content.
When was this for you?
For me?
Yeah.
Oh, straight up, like just through my entire life, I feel like the hip has just always been on. Yeah.
Like, when did you start to become like aware of them? Like, what year?
You know what? I actually, when Poets was on Much Music. Uh-huh. I remember watching Much Music, and they were throwing to the video, and they were like, coming up, the hip, or something. And I, for some reason, was sort of aware with Tragically Hip, but wasn't aware with them being called the hip. So I was kind of like, who's this? Oh, it might be like this cool... I remember actually thinking, like, this could be like a cool new like discovery that I haven't heard of yet. And then it was the Tragically Hip, and I was like, oh, I feel like I know... No, they're the ones I hear on the radio, and kind of being like, expecting something, and then it was just the hip. But I remember kind of enjoying that song.
Yeah,
when it was when it got big,
but
that was like at the end of the 90s, I guess.
Something like that. Yeah, yeah, that's like 98 or something. Poets,
late 90s. Yeah, I would have been getting it going into high school.
Yeah, yeah,
yeah.
Yeah, that's the Phantom Power album. Bob Cajun is on that album too. I know, you know, the in the video for Bob Cajun, it's like a there's a bunch of people protesting like a white supremacist
rally
or something like that. I know a bunch of the people who are in there. I went to college with them, and it's a bunch of actors.
Oh yeah,
they're all friends of mine. So I'm like, hey, look, that's Marty, that's Joe. You know. Anyway, that's my Tragically Hip story about that video.
Better than being like, I know a lot of those white supremacists in that video.
they have a lot of interesting things.
Yeah,
I like their conviction.
Yeah,
you know, yeah.
If nothing else.
Yeah, yeah. They're like standing for what they committed. Believe in, at least.
Tragically Hip are sort of a Canadian institution. I know a lot of our listeners are listening from the States and probably have no idea who they
are. Yeah, I was going to ask about the crossover because I don't know. Because I was talking to Casey about Sloan and how they didn't really ever get a super as much of a crossover as you would expect.
No, no. Like our shittiest bands make it over. It's Our Lady of Peace. It's Nickelback.
Yeah.
You know, it's a bummer. Now, part of it is because there's... Tragically Hip have remained unabashedly Canadian, and there's a lot of Canadian referencing throughout all their
stuff. Yeah,
like, but that didn't happen until like a little bit later on.
This is true. He got more and more Canadian in his writing.
Yeah, I was going to say, I can't imagine like Bob Cajun tearing up the charts.
Up to Here is the album.
There.
Up to Here is the album we listen to, and it's not like a particularly Canadian album. It's a very... I'm going to say I've heard... I think almost all of their albums.
Yeah.
I do like this band, but in a sort of a casual way.
Yeah.
They're like, I don't know. I did have a phase when I got into them, but it wasn't this album. I'm not a big fan of this record because this is when they're still pretty much just a really good bar rock band.
Yeah, that's exactly what I thought. It's like, you know, if I was at the Horseshoe in like 1988 and saw these guys, I would have thought that had been like, this is great.
Really good.
You know, and it really does sound like these guys know how to kill like at a bar.
Totally. And like it is Gord Downie that does elevate them from just being a bar band.
Yeah, absolutely.
He's a pretty strong lyricist, I think. And again, he's got a weird persona in this band because the guitar work is very... rudimentary.
I will say though that the guitar work on this is a little bit like, because we've listened to some sort of, you know, late 80s like metal that kind of took the sort of like bluesy stuff, and I will say that at least this was more interesting than that stuff.
Yeah, I'm not saying he's a piece of shit. New Orleans Sinking's got some great little riffs.
Yeah,
but they don't have good guitar
better.
Tone really.
No, it sounds like crap.
Did you think of the, like, how bluesy did you think this was, Gorman?
Not super bluesy, but I did think it does kind of have that.
It doesn't sound like Aykroyd rock.
No. It doesn't sound like Aykroyd rock, no. But it does kind of straddle, like, a sort of weird area where it was just like, I thought it was better than some of the stuff that we've listened to, but I did also kind of think, like, after, like, four or five songs, I was like, I get it.
Yeah, and you do, because that's it. Like, it's, you know, it's the singles for this album. It is Blow It High Dough. It is New Orleans 38
years old.
Boots and Hearts.
I like Boots and Hearts. That's all right, you know? But I think, I didn't get into them until the album after this.
Road Apples.
Yeah, that's the one that I had.
Yeah, it was got out of this bar rock thing, and some of the riffs were better. It was a darker album. You know, I really liked stuff like Twist My Arm and Cordelia, The Luxury.
Fiddler's Green, I think, is on that too, which is
a
fucking
really
great
nice song. Really good.
Yeah, I feel like when I
and then Fully and Completely is the next one, right?
Yeah, that was after it. I remember my friend's dad had Fully Completely.
That's the album that derailed me on them.
Yeah.
Then I was like, nope, I don't think I'm on board with this.
Why was that?
Well, I liked a couple things on it, like at the 100th Meridian and a couple other stuff, but I was at too many parties where too many people were playing fucking Wheat Kings on their fucking acoustic guitars.
It was like the entourage around the band that turned you off.
Absolutely, and a great many of us have said, like, you got to kind of quietly like the Hip, and it's not that you don't like the Hip, it's but the fan group is kind of irritating.
Well, yeah, and even for me, because I'm younger, like when I was in high school in the late 90s, even then it was like the fan group of people that liked the Hip were like, it's a weird dichotomy because the Hip aren't really sort of like a douchey band when you think of them. No. But like the dudes that listened to the Tragically Hip that were really into like New Orleans is Sinking, the Live Cuts and stuff in my high school were like the like baseball truck driving sort of like people that would beat up on people like me. And it was kind of like, oh, you like, it was weird.
They got backwards hats and they don't like colored people.
Exactly. And it's like, wait a minute. So I kind of did for a long time lump them in like that. But then I would hear their songs on the radio, I'd be like, well, I don't hate this. This is fine.
Pretty good. And I don't hate fully completely, but it was just, it was a, after, like, I Road Apples is a little bit darker of an album and a little more urgent. And then, I mean, Fully Completely is really realized. It's a great pop rock record. It has big singles on it. I like Locked in Trunk of a Car. Courage is fine. But it was
the video for Courage that really turned me on to the band, because I would have been, I don't know, 13 or 14. Yeah. Like, I saw them like, that looks... I'd never seen or heard anything like that. And I grew up in like a small farm town. I didn't know anything. And I saw it like at a buddy's house because we didn't have TV that had... We got like CBC.
Right.
And that was it.
Yeah.
So like when I saw that, it's like, wow.
Yeah.
It really... Yeah. And then I went back and I liked the earlier stuff actually a lot better.
And they looked different too, which I had to appreciate too, with this great band name. Look, it's a good name. The Tragically Hip is super cool considering how completely unhip they are.
Yeah.
Fucking great. And it's like you're in the peak of grunge shit going on. And the video for Courage, Gord cut all his hair off and is just like in this oversized, like
Boston
chunky
Bruins?
Knit Boston Bruins fucking jersey, like sweater.
Yeah.
Just... You could not be doing the more opposite of what you're supposed to look like in a video for your band right now. That's pretty cool. But I really came back on board with the band with the next album, Day for Night.
Which is a great, it's still a great record.
It sounds very good still. Really, Grace 2. And again, it got really dark again. And they kind of really toyed with that darkness a bit more. And the Canadiana really started coming out, I think, on Fully Completely. But then it just became like, look, this is what we do.
Yeah.
And I think they got lambasted for that a little bit. And I remember reading a review about the Hip where some reviewer called his Gord Downie's lyrics hoser poetry.
Okay.
And I was like, that's kind of shitty, man.
Yeah.
That's not true at all.
No, I think he has...
That's an easy shot.
It is easy and it's silly because... The part of the reason I think that it didn't really blow up is because they stayed staunchly Canadian, and he writes about Canada with a familiarity and a romanticism the way that thousands of bands write about New York, or California to a lesser sense, absolutely. And it's just like it's what he knows and what he loves, and that's a part of it. Like, okay, they didn't blow up in the States by changing their sound to sound American or something like that. And so that didn't happen for them, but they got something better out of it, which is longevity, because of that Canadian tone that they've held, they can be in this band forever.
Yeah.
You know, maybe they won't chart as much, but they could they can live off of this band for the rest of their lives.
Yeah, definitely.
You know? Yeah. Cuz I still check it out when there's a new Hip album. I'm like, right on.
Toss it on.
What's going on?
Oh yeah, no.
What are you up to?
I think like the other thing that like held them back was, so by the time that, you know, 1991 rolls around.
Sure.
They've been in the band since 1983.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, they've already been around for almost 10 years.
Right.
And so, like, their sound is already developed as, like, this unique personality. And it does sound so unique.
Yeah.
That it just didn't, it's not going to transfer. And so, like, if you're going, you know, back and forth across, you know, this frozen fucking wasteland and filling rooms.
Yeah.
Then why would you go south and play just like some little tiny bar for no money,
totally
having to fight with the fucking promoter for $100.
Yeah.
So this is like, you know what? I'm just gonna I'm gonna cash in, and I don't really give a shit about. It's like I'm more interested. I think they're more interested in like being the best band they can.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Than commercial success. Absolutely. They have enough.
Yeah.
Part of the reason I wanted to pick this album and the Hip for this episode is to get a perspective of a touring Canadian musician.
Yeah.
Oh.
As Matt, you've done a number of times.
Yep.
With the Schomburg Fair. Because, I mean, this is, I mean, obviously they've gotten to a point where they can be very comfortable with it. But, I mean, 10 years before, because Fully Completely was when real success happened.
Yeah, yeah.
Yep.
So, I mean, with your experience being on the road, and I mean, I don't know, town to town, it's a kind of thing where you're kind of fighting for your life every time you.
I think, you know, also it's different.
You get to win over an audience every time with a set.
It's different for them. So, like, by the time that Up to Here came out, it was 1989. Yeah. They were signed to MCA Records, and they made the record in Memphis.
Yeah.
And Garantia was not on their dime. So yeah. MCA paid for that.
For sure.
Too. So, like, you've got, like, this record company fronting you money to go and tour and so on. And this was a time when people sold lots of records.
Yeah. Oh, this is the peak. Of-
yeah, yeah. Probably not this record.
No.
But, like, I mean, it doesn't really matter. So, like, record companies, you know, are like art galleries. So in the art business, the gallery takes half your dough. So you sell a painting for, like, $1,000. They take $500.
Mm. Right.
Right off the top. And, you know, so if you don't sell a lot, it's like, oh, man, this guy's fucking taking all this money. It's like the dealer is losing a shit ton on people that don't sell.
Mm-hmm.
And they know that. That's okay. They're interested. It's like, you know, let's see 3, 4, 5 shows. And with record companies, it's the same thing. So it's like, we'll have people that, like, we believe in, that even if they're not selling, it's like they believe that it's going to take off. Because they've got, like, the handful of people that are making them all the fucking money.
Right. Yeah, yeah.
So it's like, you know, Madonna goes and puts a record out and makes $1 billion.
Yeah, and there's the trickle
down.
And then
they
can Well, that's why the industry has changed so much now, is you'll never get developmental artists again. You know, Tom Waits couldn't happen again.
Mm-hmm. No, no,
not on a major label.
No way.
Anyway,
yeah,
because, like, they liked him, but they're like, we don't know what the fuck you are.
Yeah, so we'll just, like,
we're gonna let you coast for a decade.
Yeah,
and just give you
Zappa.
Yeah, just we're gonna have Springsteen and the Eagles cover your shit, and people will figure it out eventually.
Eventually,
you do whatever the fuck you want.
Until
like, that's not a thing with a label anymore.
Or where you, or like, you could probably still do that, but you would have to have a full time job.
Absolutely.
Well.
Yeah.
And the other thing that happened, I would say, like, in 1989, so when these guys were, like, touring the country, like, the systems were not, like, in place yet. So, like, there wasn't the same number of venues that you could go and play original music in,
right?
And people in those towns to go and see original music. There would be, like, you'd be, like, the cover band. And people would go out to go dancing.
Yeah, yeah.
So people don't really go out to go dancing to bands
no.
anymore. They go to listen, which makes it great to go and play. Yeah. But also, no one wants to buy anything anymore. You still get, like, awesome people that's like, we'll go and buy your t-shirt every time you show up in that town. It's like, oh, you already have one. It's like,
I want another one.
I need one to sleep in.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
Well, that's creepy, but all right. Yeah, no, it's a really tough slog. So, like, good on them for doing it. It would have been much more difficult then. And then, like, this is really, like, the time when you start getting, like, good Canadian bands and, like, a glut of them.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The CanCon rules that happened, like, in the 70s took effect enough that it was able to develop all of this talent that came up. You know, like bands like Junkhouse and Rusty.
Yeah,
right.
All the East Coast bands.
Yeah,
the Odds were great. 5440 was a band that
I like 5440. They got some good tunes.
They had some great tunes, and, like, that CanCon thing really helped them because they had to play that fucking song on the radio all the time.
Fuck yeah!
Because there was only it was 5440 and Rush.
Yeah.
And I don't know who
Helix?
Else. Helix.
Yeah.
Well, awesome.
H-E-L-I.
Yeah. Yeah.
They should still play Helix. Anyways.
Yeah.
Keep it up, pal.
I think it's really interesting that as we were talking and I'm looking at their records and their debut EP, like, I expected kind of, because the one we're talking about today is their debut full length.
Yeah.
And that was released on MCA, like you were saying. But I clicked back to their EP to think, like, oh, well, what were they on before they hit the full debut on MCA? But their EP was MCA.
Mm.
So they were just, like it says here, sort of signed to a long-term deal after they were just seen playing clubs, which again, to the point you were saying, Greg, like, wouldn't happen anymore.
No,
like,
they must have been so refreshing too. Like, people were banking on this because the hair metal thing.
Yeah,
I mean, it's still going on, and that's really what you're seeing in a lot of bars and stuff like that. Or that, not necessarily hair metal, but that.
No,
that's what rock bands are. And there was the music listeners were so thirsty for something to happen. Mm-hmm. That's why when 91 and grunge broke. everyone just completely embraced it because it was like, finally changed.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
You know, it was different. And so the hip couldn't have been more different than what was going on in music. Like this really rootsy, I don't know, that's not the word I want, but like they didn't look like they were trying to look like a fancy band. They're just like, you know, schlubby guys in t-shirts sweating their balls off. And again, like probably playing the Horseshoe or like a small venue.
That's totally.
I'm certainly just killed.
Probably,
I've seen them live. I went to this. I saw the Hip live, and it's really like people say, it's fucking amazing. I got tickets, and I wasn't even all that excited. Some friends of mine bought me tickets for my birthday.
Yeah,
and I was like, cool. They were like, "Hey, here's your happy birthday." And I opened it up, and I'm like, "Oh, the Hip, right on."
Yeah,
all right.
Cool. Yeah,
I don't really listen to them anymore, but fucking A. And I went and saw them, and had my fucking face blown off.
Yeah.
It was nuts. That guy is the greatest frontman I've seen, and it's unbelievable.
Yeah,
so like
so
them in like a small club
you
must have been
imagine.
Like, holy fuck, you know?
Yeah, that they were probably like amassing crowds even at those smaller shows.
And I'm sure like, you know, the late 80s, early 90s, he is in a tight embrace with the white lady too. Ah. So it's just like super awesome.
Yeah.
He is keyed
keyed the fuck up.
Because the other thing that was happening then too was the whole Cameron House scene. So you've got like guys like Handsome Ned, that is building this like alt country, which is starting to go on, and where Blue Rodeo is happening.
Right.
So like they're like the Hip are like this like perfect point in between the like, grunge,
doing like the rock stuff,
and you know Blue Rodeo, which is more of like an alt country, vibe. So I think like you know Colonel Tom in New Orleans is Sinking. Colonel Tom is like country singer that plays at the fucking Cameron House all the time. And I'm pretty sure like that's who he's talking about.
Oh, must be, you know?
Yeah.
Tom, what's wrong? What's going on? It's like, there's no fucking dope is what the problem is.
And I think it's interesting to listen. Like I said, I thought this album, it wasn't really for me. It was a little kind of like samey, but
this is very much my least favorite.
Yeah. But I do.
I don't know. I have fond memories of it. I put it on. I hadn't listened to it. I don't know, 20 years?
Sure.
Yeah.
Maybe.
Total throwback.
But I mean, like, totally. Like, you know, my dad, we would put it on and drive to, like, hockey games.
Yeah.
Yeah.
In the middle of fucking winter.
Yeah.
And, like, I put it on. It's like,
that's,
you knew all the words to just about everything.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
It was like, this
Road
is
Apples
great.
Is the one that I do that
with. Yeah. Yeah.
Like, not even, like, before we picked this album, maybe this is why it was in the back of my head, too. My wife and I drank a bottle of, two bottles of wine. And she fell asleep, and I was all wine drunk and, like, feeling nostalgic. And I just went on YouTube and just blasted through all these Hip songs. I'm like, what a delight these guys are.
Yeah.
Oh, he's good Canadian boys. Holy balls. Drinking wine. Doodly-doo. Wonderful band.
Yeah.
Doodly-doo.
Yeah.
Wonderful.
I think what was most...
getting all misty-eyed
totally
listening
like,
to Fiddler's Green, you know?
Driving around listening to it. It's like, this is so good.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But I think the other thing about this record is that, like, there's a few songs that... Okay, their identity is starting to come in. And there's other songs that really sound like very capable, you know, late 80s college rock.
Yeah. Oh, like, I'm not saying this is a bad album.
No, me either.
It just, I prefer the later work.
They haven't found their voice.
No. Yeah. They're finding it.
They're finding it, though.
I mean, you can hear it like in the opening lines of Blow It High Dough. He has such a grasp on that story he's going to sing to you. There's so much character and so much conviction in his voice that it's almost undeniable. Like, you can't hear that as a record label executive or whatever. Like, there's something here.
Yeah,
this guy is going to grab people because there's just something in the timbre of his voice. You just believe him.
Yeah.
You know, he really means
that's
it.
That's the main thing.
Yeah.
Right? It's like you listen to him and you believe it. Mm-hmm. And I think that's where, like, this record falters. That I don't believe him the whole time.
No.
So even a song like 38 Years Old... is like, for me, like hit and miss, because there are some clunker lines in there, along with some brilliant ones.
Yeah.
It's just like, you don't quite, it's not perfect. The guitar playing is just like wanking all over the place. He hasn't quite learned like the idea of like tastefulness.
Yeah.
It's like sometimes you need like a ripping guitar solo, sometimes you don't play at all.
Yeah.
You know, and I think that's like something that happens with like young guys. They would have only been like in their like mid-20s.
Oh, sure.
Totally, yeah.
And, first full big album, like, oh,
it's like, I need to fucking be on it. Jesus Christ! Do you know what's wrong with this? There's less of me. We need more of that.
Yeah, yeah.
It's fucking more rock.
Yeah.
And there are those open separate spaces right away, though, on Road Apples. There's
Bingo.
Breath, you know.
Yeah. Because they listen to this and they're like, yeah. Oh.
Oh, shit.
Yeah.
Listen to a song like The Luxury, you know, that has a lot of dynamic to it and really nice open spaces and lets the bass breathe a lot.
Yeah.
Good lyrics too.
Yeah. Nice lyrics. I think the thing about what interests me about sort of the stories of like MCA picking them up so early and stuff mm-hmm. is oddly juxtaposed by our other podcast, See You Next Wednesday, and we mm-hmm. were listening to the Canadian band Magic.
Right.
And I feel like this whole kind of story of like taking a chance on a band because they had an amazing live show or were amassing a following and then seeing where it goes because you had the high end. Like when that high end dropped out and they're not doing this anymore, now the people that they're taking chances on are the people that have proved themselves as producers for Bieber.
Right.
You know what I mean? Like the Canadian producer, yeah. He did all the Pitbull and Bieber songs. Let's give him an album and he can do this faux reggae band Magic.
Yeah.
And it's like those are the people now that are they're taking a chance on. Like that's their chance because they know it's at least in some way proven. They're not finding a band and being like, well, let's see where this goes.
Yeah,
or whatever.
Yeah,
they don't have the fucking...
Let's foster an audience and build up a reputation and ride this thing for 20 years.
It's so difficult. And like in Canada in particular, like it's really tough. We don't have the population base really to support. So like a place like Windsor, for example, amazing rock town. Tom and Frank at the Fog Lounge should get, you know, a medal from Canada for, you know, staying in business and supporting Canadian music so long. So like there's what 80,000 people or whatever in Windsor. Like, mm-hmm. I don't know exactly the number, but there's about 200 people that consistently go to shows. So you go and play Windsor and like that's your draw every time. So if there's a band playing in say three venues 3 nights a week, it's like you're just working those 200 people the whole time, and like that's like a major Canadian city and so like you have that, you know, constantly. And then you've got CBC, which is like your main support base, mm-hmm. and even like CBC Radio 3 is like good and they're doing a great job. They play a variety of music. They've got, you know, CBC Radio 2 or like the internet stations that have like a whole bunch of different kinds of things, but it tends to be like so middle of the road, boring, we're not going to offend anybody.
Yep.
And so then you've got a local record label that had like alt country music that had some exciting people on it, mm-hmm. and so on. And then they had one artist in particular that like went like a little bit more MOR with her sound and just started funding everyone. And they've lost all of their edge together, but like they're doing great. They're on CBC all the time.
Yeah,
they're filling theaters, and what they're doing is boring as fuck.
yeah.
You know, so it's to do something interesting again, like what these guys were actually doing.
Mm-hmm. Totally.
Then, and to be successful, is so difficult. Like even like a band like Arcade Fire, that's, you know, maybe doing that now. They started that record came out in 2001.
Yeah,
Funeral. And that's what, almost 15 years ago.
Yeah.
You know, that's a long time.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I gave a talk at the art college today, and I was talking to prospective students. And I was like, you know, when I started here in 1998, you were 4 years old. And like, so, you know, as a musician now, going and playing shows, like, that's my new fans that I have to, it's like, when I became like sort of like an adult, they were just barely alive.
Yeah.
You know? And so like, what do we like have in, it's, yeah, it's totally,
it's pretty crazy,
fucking weird.
Yeah.
It's like, that guy looks like, you know, my 40-year-old unemployed uncle that lives in my basement just telling me to listen to more Led Zeppelin.
Yeah.
It's like, Led Zeppelin rules, just come down here. Yeah, I don't know. Anyways, I think good on them. The record is totally fine. Yeah. There's a whole bunch of singable songs. Yeah. Listen, you made a record that has four hits on it.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
one that's still played on rock radio today.
All the time, yeah.
All Constantly. The time.
Yeah, like New Orleans is Sinking yeah. is like, I didn't even realize that was on this album until yeah. you mentioned it, Greg, because to me that's like the song that like the people at in my high school in 99, 2000, 2001 were talking about like, oh, have you heard this live cut of it where they jam on it or like, you know, yeah, like yeah, to yeah. me it was almost like, I felt like, I felt like it was going on.
Disaster came from, right?
A whole bunch of the
But yeah,
came from
it yeah. felt like to me like that was going on. I felt like maybe that was one of their mid-career out like
right,
songs.
Right.
No, I didn't even, and then I listened to this, I was like, oh, it was on their first record
yeah,
and it
crazy.
Just had that sort of
Which
lasting.
Which would have been amazing to see like live.
Yeah.
Right
yeah.
there. It's like, okay, so like they play the song and it's simple enough. You can totally do anything in the middle.
Yeah.
It's like going back to Led Zeppelin.
Totally.
Like they're Dazed and Confused.
Yeah.
Which just has like, all right, and then we'll play the song for like 2 minutes, and then we'll jam for 45.
Yeah,
and then we'll bring it back
yeah.
home.
Yeah,
and it's sell that riff.
It's yeah. such a huge song for Canada. New Orleans is Sinking. Like it's almost beyond being just some song by a
yeah.
band. Like everybody knows it. When I was out at that bachelor party where I barfed all over the lake,
that was a great story, by the way.
Thank
yeah.
you. It was a real good time. while I was then I was rushing to get back to the city. And I had to get a drive from wherever the hell I was in the county
mm-hmm.
to...
Where are you guys anyways?
You know, I can't... I don't even remember. They just call it the county. I can't... I can never...
Oh, yeah.
The county.
Yeah. I it's totally
the
gone from my
lake?
Mind.
Yeah,
yeah. I was out on the lake in the county. Prince Edward County?
Oh, maybe.
Yeah. I was near Picton.
Okay, you were on the Bay of Quinte.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. So I had to get a ride to catch a train. And so this nice young country fella named Nelson, who's 21 years old, 22 years old, he drives me the half an hour drive to the train.
Was it in a pickup truck?
It was in a pickup truck.
Nice.
Right
yeah.
Was it a Ford?
I don't remember. But
probably.
I would bet my life on it.
Yeah.
And it's just a good old country boy. He hops in the car and he's like, all right, let's get down to the train there. Come on.
Yeah.
And no shoes. No shirt, driving me flying down the highway.
That's for fuck sure, right there twice.
Yeah,
hey,
oh, yeah.
Let's get going.
You're yeah. in for a rip.
And he's just blasting music the whole time, and we don't really have anything else in common. This kid's 21 years
yeah,
old.
Yeah, yeah.
But then New Orleans is Sinking comes on the radio, and me and this kid who don't know each other sang every word at the top of our lungs
yeah,
the
which
whole
amazing.
Thing. I'm like, and I was thinking about it afterwards, like, how does he know every word to New Orleans is Sinking? Well, because he lives
play
in Canada.
Every 20
yeah.
minutes.
Yeah, yeah, every 20 radio. Minutes. Yeah, and but it was just like, woo!
Yeah,
it's still great. You can't
it's
help
still
but
great.
Love
yeah.
it. You know,
it's yeah,
a great
it is,
unifying thing.
It is. Yeah, because like if I'm like to be at home with my dad and like a Tragically Hip song comes on, or if my dad was to be in a room where somebody brought up the Tragically Hip, he would yeah. be like, oh yeah, New Orleans is Sinking, great song.
Yeah,
like I feel like that would be the one that my dad would know, and
for
it
sure.
is kind of that like crossing a lot of different like age generations
yeah,
for sure,
which is pretty cool, you know.
How did they get like become a magnet for douchebags though?
Yeah,
like what happened?
I don't
there?
Know where that we were trying to think of what the American equivalent would be, but we kept on just picking like bands that weren't good though.
Yeah,
you
like
know,
what.
Like Dave Matthews Band or something like that, where it has a bunch of like kind of a douchey fan base or something. Or,
yeah.
Or Fish. Or
yeah.
Something.
Yeah, but like you can't really.
You can't compare.
I don't like the music anyway. I mean,
yeah.
people like the music. It's not like, I don't know.
A talented guy, lots of horns.
Sure.
big
I'm sure he's a nice fellow too. But yeah, I don't know what the equivalent
no,
is.
No, I don't know.
Because it is, there is a thing. Like every different group of people I've walked through, we've talked about the Hip. It's like, yeah, but the fucking fans. Or working in bars too. Like on fucking Canada Day. If
the Tasmanian Devil with the fucking Canada shirts, like
yeah,
yeah,
oh,
yeah.
Man.
Yeah.
If the Hip play Toronto,
ATVs,
yeah,
and
Jesus.
If they did
slurs.
Like the Young and Dundas free show,
yeah,
like,
yeah,
you
yeah. and it's Canada Day, I'm gonna get swamped at the bar with people that I wish I could set on fire, and they're gonna fucking. There's gonna be fights.
Yeah,
there's gonna be shit fucking broken, and girls are gonna get harassed. It's just one of those. It's like hand in hand, and I don't understand. It's like this band that has this like really kind of introspective, you know,
yeah.
poetic lyricism,
very literate.
It's like, what, yeah, yeah, what is? I don't understand. I can't connect all the dots. I don't
yeah.
know.
Gord's just gotta start singing about going to university.
I guess. Is,
yeah.
is it Pearl Jam? is it Pearl Jam? Is that the
I
American
think maybe
equivalent?
It's Pearl Jam.
Is that
yeah,
what it is?
Maybe.
Yeah,
where it's like they're not really a bad band.
I think you know what? From the outsider of not really listening to either of these
yeah.
bands, I think Pearl Jam might. might be the apt, because I like in college I knew dudes that were really into Pearl Jam that were I wouldn't say were like that.
Yeah.
But then I did see in high school like all the dudes that were into Pearl Jam, and they were all the kind of people I'd be like, well, I'm not gonna hang out with that guy.
Yeah, like when I was in high school and like grunge was fucking happening.
Yeah.
You know, you listen to all like these bands, and there's all these all the like jock dicks.
There was the Pearl Jam Nirvana divide.
Yeah, and the jock guys. Now listen, I'm not signaling people out here. I played football. I played sports. I mean, the mentality of the jock.
Yes.
That's their sole identity.
Yeah, you know, just like a lot of guys with, you know, the backwards ball caps and like Mountain Co-op gear.
And again, like not everyone that drives a pickup truck is an asshole or whatever.
Yeah, no,
for
no,
me,
no.
Yeah, when
not.
I was in high school,
we are stereotyping a bit here.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, if you're driving a pickup truck, it generally means that you have a job.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Do you have a job, sir?
Whereas in high school, if you drove a pickup truck in Peterborough, Ontario, going to TAS in a fairly well-to-do area, it meant your dad had a job.
Right. Yeah,
exactly. You were able to take the pickup truck to high school.
But yeah, maybe that's what it is, because there was a definite, like, and that was a turnoff for listening to, well, there was a multiple reasons that I didn't really spend a lot of time listening to Pearl Jam, but that was definitely one of them, where there was just this different fan group that moved in on it that changed what it looked like or what it seemed to mean.
Well, totally.
You know, so I feel like that's happened to the hip in Canada.
Perhaps what it could have been is, you know, songs like Bob Cajun and a lot of like their Canadian type references are very white, male centric.
Yeah, yes, they are.
Privileged.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, because it's, you know, Wheat Kings is totally the kind of song that you listen to around a campfire in Georgian Bay up at the cottage.
Totally. Yeah.
I've done it.
Yeah.
Sure.
And it is a delight. But you know, if I was a young black dude living at Jane and Finch, that's not my Canada.
No,
you know, so like maybe that's where like that, you know, jockness.
I can see that, and I think
you know,
being,
it comes out of like white privilege.
Yeah, and being pushed on those sort of like not small town but not big town places like where I grew up on like college rock, but sort of like radio rock, the Wolf 101.5 FM, and everybody's driving, you know, to their cottages for the weekend. It's very much embedded in that, kind of like you're saying, like if you're going to, you know, if you live in Peterborough and you have a cottage on Rice Lake, you're probably pretty well done off in terms of being a middle class or higher. You can afford a house in Peterborough and a cottage somewhere, and you're driving up. Maybe that's kind of part of what happened. You know what I mean? It's being played on the radio. You're listening to it at your cottage, and then you're going back to school and being kind of jock-ish in attitude. Maybe they were just sort of spread
like,
that way.
Listening to it now, like it was great to listen to it in the summer. It's like, this is the fucking perfect summer music.
Oh yeah,
it's wonderful. Boots and hearts.
Oh yeah,
sign me up, pal.
Yeah. Explosions and hip, man.
Yeah, right on.
I love them both.
Sign me up.
Yeah.
I'd be curious to hear what the listeners have to say. I'm going to read the Facebook
page. Yeah, I know.
Please, think, if you haven't listened to The Hip, and even if you don't live in especially to our American listeners, I would really be interested in hearing like what some American listeners have to say about this or any of their other albums.
If you were going to recommend, particularly for Americans or anybody who thinks they know The Hip or you know, or only knows the singles, what would be the album you would say?
Day for Night.
Yeah, I think I'd probably go for that too.
And then Road Apples number two.
Yeah.
Okay. So if I want to, even me, if I want to go deeper, I'll go Day for Night next. Okay.
Yeah. Day for Night and Road Apples. I like Trouble at the Hen House too. It's a little spotty.
There's a couple
spotty.
Of really good ones.
There's a couple. The good ones are very good.
There's a very interesting like song structures in them. And they start to really stretch out.
Yeah, like Don't Wake Daddy, I think, is a really cool song.
The board game?
Yeah.
Oh, I don't even Ahead by a Century, for example. So like there's a song.
Oh, yeah, I know that
wonderful song.
Well, it's a wonderful song. It's a very like, you know, it's not like a straight ahead melody.
No.
It's like really like a bit choppy and like, but totally works. So they're taking these unlikable things, like making it flow so nicely. Mm-hmm. I learned how to play that at guitar. I'm like, really? And then, holy shit.
Yeah.
they got that to work.
Yeah.
They're a pretty good band.
Yeah. Yeah, Day for Night. That's probably the one to check out to hear where they. What a bar rock band with, you know, some inspiration can become. I think.
Yes.
And some artistic integrity.
And I think it'll be good for me to listen to the one you recommend after this, because I did feel like this one was sort of like, I can I still don't have a grasp on the band after listening to this. You know what
I mean?
Like, it's kind of okay, I kind of understand where you started, and I know where you kind of got to eventually from being in high school and hearing the later songs.
Yeah.
But yeah, I don't really know, you know, like, and they're right. Like, they are almost like, I feel like the Pearl Jam is pretty good, because I know they're an easy band, I feel like, for people to write off, especially Canadians, because you grow up around it.
Right.
Being like, oh, fuck those guys. And I feel like that's what it was like with Pearl Jam. And then a million
bar bands popped up that were just like
Is like the other fucking worst thing. So, like, you know, Pearl Jam comes out, 10 is a great big hit. They put out Verses. It's got Daughter. And what's the other big hit on that song, that record?
On Verses? I don't know. Animal?
Daughter's the big one.
That was a really big one, yeah.
So Daughter comes out, and then you've got Creed.
Yeah.
And
then, you know...
All the stuff.
That's, that's the trail that leads to Nickelback. Or whatever.
Yeah, that's...
That all comes out, and it's like, you're just like ripping off Eddie's voice, which is... any artists out there that are listening, the... Anybody that you like, the thing that you like about them the most that comes off first, that's the thing that you don't steal.
Right.
Yeah.
You want to be a very good thief.
Yeah.
And the idea behind being a good thief is you want to steal things that no one's going to notice.
Exactly.
So like a fellow like Tom Waits. Tom Waits is amazing.
Very good.
What you don't want to steal from Tom is his voice.
Is his gravelly voice.
Is the gravelly voice.
Yeah.
Because Tom Waits is trying to sound like Louis Armstrong, which, like, nobody knows. I don't know why that doesn't come up more often, but that's what he's trying to sound like. So you don't steal his voice. You don't sing the clickety-clack, biggity-boo, you know, fucking Carnival After Midnight business. You don't steal those.
Yeah.
You steal the tightness of his songwriting, the interesting song structures, you know, the, you know, ambient noise behind very classic, you know, DAG chord progressions. Mm-hmm. Those are the things that you fucking steal. And so, yeah, Tragically Hip, Pearl Jam, Nirvana to some degree, ruined music for like the last half of the 90s, the early, you know, 2000s, from being good.
Yeah. And people, you know,
and
stealing
people being
the wrong
fucking
things.
Stupid.
Yeah.
Stealing the wrong things.
Yeah, because when you hear the Tragically Hip, the thing that people are going to steal is like not is the easy almost thing to steal, that like the sound and stuff. Like, they're not stealing like his amazing lyricism, because you can't just be like, oh, I'll start writing brilliant poetic lyrics. Do you know what I mean? Like,
I'll just start doing that. Saskatchewan's got cows and grass.
Yeah.
And I like Molson Export.
Yeah, like, what do you?
Yeah. Pickup truck.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, you can't just... It's
Goldies
not something...
Go.
Yeah. No, I do think... Bullshit. I really do want people that are listening to... That haven't heard the Hip, or if you hate the Hip, or if you live in America, I do want... Like, I think this is a really interesting conversation.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, I would like to hear more.
And they were such a cool part of... Like, there was a... Such a boom of great Canadian music. I know we're probably going long here, but... Having them and Blue Rodeo and The Odds and 5440 and Sloan, like the 90s were packed with Limblifter.
Yeah.
Great bands and all kinds of genres. Rheostatics, for Christ's sakes.
Yeah.
And even like bands that you weren't necessarily like super embarrassed about, but we're glad we're doing well. Like,
fuck yeah.
The Tea Party, 13 Engines.
Yeah. Fuck yeah. I really like 13 Engines, man.
You know, Our Lady Peace. Who else was like huge?
You
there?
Recorded with John Critchley of 13 Engines, right?
Yep.
Yeah, I recorded there once too. Swell guy, John Critchley.
He's a pretty smart son of a gun. He knows what he's doing. he's super pro.
Yeah.
But yeah, there's a
huge
Junkhouse was was great, which spawned oh, what's their name now?
Oh, are they? Oh, right.
Black and the Rodeo Kings.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Tom Wilson.
And
Spooky Rubin.
Yeah.
Hell yeah. Right on. I was really into Spooky. And I feel like there's really strong Canadian. Well, there's always been good music coming out of Canada, but I really feel like there's a maybe it's the Arcade Fire helping the indie stuff really jump up, you know. But like on my four of my five favorite albums of this year so far are all Canadian and probably local, really.
Yeah.
I don't know. I feel like it's a really strong.
Totally.
You know.
Yeah.
I think before like that, like before the 90s happened, like being Canadian, well, even like during the 90s to some degree, but like less so, you were embarrassed about being from here or like listening to Canadian music. I think it's still pretty. I remember you guys were talking about Greg. You won on the See You Next Wednesday's like the winner's choice, mm-hmm. right? And you were watching a movie like, is this a Canadian movie?
Yeah.
And yeah, no, it totally was.
Sure.
Yeah. And music used to be like that.
Absolutely. Yeah, I was gonna I was gonna say about the movie thing.
You know, Rush or Neil Young. You know, it was very.
Or Leonard Cohen.
Yeah, you know, these bigger than a country, you know,
yeah.
musicians. Because, I mean, I knew all of them before I moved to Canada. And I was like, oh, Neil Young's Canadian? Oh, that's neat. I live here now.
Or the, guess, or the guess who you didn't
Or even
know.
Brian yeah. Adams, you know. It was like, then, but then when
well,
I was...
I was thinking about that last yeah. night. You know, Brian Adams is a really good example of someone that didn't make these Canadian references and crossed over
right.
and became like an international
yeah.
star. So like, you know, the summer of 69, I'm not even sure, like, was he old enough to be a teenager in 69? Maybe.
What's that song from? 83?
I don't know.
So that's, yeah. I doubt it. I doubt it that that was necessarily the case.
I don't know if that song's true.
but anyhow, like, it didn't matter.
No.
You know? Because like it's like, all right, we'll take, you know, the idea of nostalgia that doesn't exist.
Yeah.
Check.
Gotcha.
When I wrote the, you know, love story of teen, we're back and forth, catchy song, everyone can relate to it. So
yeah.
I'm going to write a story that everyone can relate to, and I don't put like these specific places in it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Boop. Pop success.
Yeah. Beautiful. Yeah.
Totally.
Anyhow, sorry. I cut you off there.
No. Not at all.
Blithering on.
No, I'm, and
I don't know why this popped in my mind, but when we were talking like about Arcade Fire and sort of what they're doing and how good that is, but I was just thinking like you still also see the people stealing the wrong things. Like when Funeral came out in 2001 and Merge picked it up and they were huge.
Oh, yeah.
All of a sudden every band had 15
guys.
15
we got to play toys.
Yeah.
We're going to have a bunch of Jesus Christ.
Yeah. So it never ends.
Oh, yeah. Over and over.
Yeah.
Anyway.
But I mean, those people also didn't get successful and on the radio.
No.
They just filled like bars for
yes.
a while.
Yeah. For
That's
a while.
True.
They didn't like, you know, or like when the Twee thing happened.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So we're going to have a guy and a girl and we're going to sing in like little tiny whispers. Yeah. Play fucking ukuleles and.
Yeah.
You know.
Little xylophones. Yeah. Yeah.
What's
yeah,
the thing
yeah.
that you blow when you play the keyboard?
Oh. Yes. I've seen.
That's also
every band would
toy.
Have the little xylophone and the little. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
yeah. yeah.
Moldy peaches and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
That kind of thing. Yeah.
You know, that really became a thing. But they never became like
so
a dominant
popular, yeah.
force.
No. Yeah. No. Because it was, again, what made.
On
you know,
the radio, because the, it didn't radio didn't matter really.
Yeah,
no, that's when it really stopped mattering.
Yeah,
and no one took the right things because it was the uniqueness of
yes
Funeral, and you know that's what that really worked.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, so, you gotta yeah. be a good thief.
Yeah,
really good.
You don't even want people to know that it's gone.
Yeah, if there's one thing to learn about this discussion about canned rock and music in general,
yeah.
be a good thief.
Yep.
Yeah,
pretty good.
Totally.
All right. Well, yeah. Check out some hip.
Yeah,
Americans.
I hope
fellow Americans.
We schooled some Americans. Yeah, USA. We did a meeting of the nations here. We did the American movie,
uh-huh.
a very pro USA movie. Then we had a really amazing discussion about Canadian rock. Yeah,
pretty good.
We're bringing bridges, man. We're
yep.
building bridges here.
Well, let's hop back into the Klingon Bird of Prey.
All right,
and get home.
All right,
get in. Here we are.
Oh,
we're back in 2014. While we're back here, I want to thank you, Matt, for being on the show.
Yeah. Thanks a lot for having me. I'm a huge fan of you guys, and I think you know, both your podcasts are great, and what you're doing with Modern Superior is pretty awesome. I've gotten
thanks,
really
buddy.
Into the do-over.
Yeah,
you know,
yeah.
as a result,
excellent.
That stuff's really cool, and I've listened to all the stuff. I'm a big fan. It's really nice to be.
Thanks, man.
You know, considered a friend of the show.
Oh,
yeah, totally.
Yeah, it's pretty awesome.
It's an honor to have you here. Before we get too far away from our music discussion, because
yeah.
I have a couple questions for you. There are multiple things you could plug, but one of them is definitely the new Schomburg Fair album.
Yeah.
Which I absolutely adore.
Yes. Oh, my God.
Thanks, guys.
I think my favorite one that you guys have done. And I just wanted to ask a little bit about the recording process of that, because you and I spoke about it a couple of weeks ago. But I just kind of wanted to get, again, if people are interested in music and trying to be a musician. You recorded this one differently, like
yeah, this
pretty
was
quick, right?
This was the first There's a number. This we recorded it like totally live off the floor.
Yeah.
Just like in a weekend with Dean Marino of Paper Maps.
Right. He's very good.
We recorded our 2009 record Gospel with him at Chemical Sound as well. So he's like a guy that we knew. And we had like a nice working relationship and we played shows and so on together. And so we were trying to get a grant. So we're going to get a grant, make a record and change our name and try to, you know, rebrand ourselves.
Yeah.
Cause it was getting to the point where, you know, we'd been around long enough, but our sound had changed, so much.
Quite
from
a bit.
Where we started. So everyone that we approached with, our music, they were like, oh yeah, those are the fucking drunk country dudes.
Yeah.
You know, with a guy with a super deep voice. No, thank you. Regardless that, you know, something was different. So it's like, okay, we thought it's like, oh, we need to change. It's just like rebrand. Cause what, you know, the name now is very different from what it was before. Mm-hmm. Let's get a grant. We'll do this. We'll do a tour. Hail Mary pass.
Yeah.
So we did. So we, you know, wrote the grant, did a big Canadian tour, had like at least like an EP of like demos online to like help support it, and didn't get the grant. And so it's like, well, you know, we've been back and forth, you know, so many times now. I was going to have a child. I wasn't. My wife's going to have a child that I was responsible for. And, you know, we all have like, not just jobs, but like careers.
Yeah.
So it's, you know, getting harder and harder, like by the time you're in your mid-30s to justify going away so much. It's like, so it's like, well, let's go make a record and just like record it, because we were so happy. We were really happy with like where we were at. We were really into the tunes and felt good about it as a group. So we just recorded it for ourselves. And the idea was just to do it and then just like make it available to all the people that came out and supported us over, you know, all the years and everything. Because it is really nice to be able to go to a town and there are some people that, you know, they've come out. You can stay on their place, you know, like Roger Nelson out in Halifax, crashing on his floor for, you know, a decade. Yeah. Every time we're in Halifax, you know, so it's like so nice. And like Heather makes us breakfast, or like Gareth out at the Capitol Theater in Fredericton and all of that kind of thing. You know, all the good people at like the Pyramid Cabaret. It's like, well, you know, you're 24 hours away. Thank you for being nice and like put a great big spread out for us and stuff. So it's like, it's for all of those guys and everyone that showed up to the gigs, like my buddy Ryan McGibbon out in Winnipeg would come like every time. It's like, well, you know, that's pretty awesome. So like, this is for like all of you guys and all the people that would come out to the show. So that's what, so we made it like mostly just for us and like for the people that were into us to say like, thanks a lot for coming out.
Yeah.
That's really wonderful.
Totally.
And it is such a great album. And
so as a result, we didn't want to spend any money.
Yeah.
It's like, okay, let's just fucking just go cut it.
So yeah.
We just like played every song twice. And then
you had just come off a tour too, yeah?
Yeah, so
or
we
pretty
we
close to.
We generally only tour in the wintertime.
Mm-hmm. Great.
As one should.
Of course, in Canada.
16 hours of darkness. It's fucking true. Like the sun doesn't come up till like 8:30,
yeah,
and then it's down at 4.
Yeah,
it's like 16 hours, fucking black. You don't know what time it is. You show up at fucking Kenora, the Tim Hortons there, fucking clock spinning backwards. Yeah. I'll have the chicken salad sandwich. We've never had the chicken salad sandwich. Everyone's got your face.
Yeah.
Like, oh my god.
Canadian Twilight Zone.
Yeah, exactly. so we just like cut everything twice, and then the next day went in, did all the vocals.
Yeah.
And then that was it. And then
that's amazing.
And
I wouldn't
just,
even
like,
have known.
Dean just mixed on the fly.
Yeah.
And
no, because it sounds amazing.
There's no overdubs.
And the first time
like
that I listened was when I think one or two songs came out, sort of like to promote. Mm-hmm. And I heard it on like some some speakers of mine that were not good speakers, and I was like, oh man, I don't know about the sound of this album. I was like, it's kind of sounds pretty slick. And then I put it on my headphones when I actually gave the full album a listen to, and it like blew me away, because I was kind of expecting like, oh, it's going to be a bit slicker. And then I listened to it and I was like, holy shit, like,
you can hear like the snare drum,
everything is so everything. yeah,
it's a big sound,
it's huge.
Yeah.
And like all the times I switch back and forth between guitar and banjo, like that's all live on the fly.
Yeah. That's well, the energy, like there's a definitely, if
although I think at the same time, like, that doesn't matter at all.
Yeah,
you know, like the only thing that matters is like, does it sound good?
Totally.
I think there can be sometimes like too much.
It sounds though, it's
preciousness around. Like,
yeah,
we're gonna have this live thing, and it's gonna be amazing.
When you try,
but
that,
if you suck, it doesn't matter.
Yeah,
it's
terrible. Exactly. No, but it sounds like it's to me like when I listen to this album on headphones. And again, it's one of my favorites of the year for sure. Mm-hmm. Easily,
absolutely
easily. Like when the first song kicks in, you're just like, holy shit, Schoenberger doing it. Yeah, and but when you listen to it, it sounds poured over. Like, it sounds like a lot of care has been put into, like,
a lot of effort getting
that sort of, like, full sound. And then when you say, like, oh, we just did a live and I grabbed the banjo when I needed the banjo, you're like, holy shit.
It's crazy.
It sounds effortless.
And its atmosphere is such a rare thing in a record. You can have, like, a lot of really good songs. You don't have to have it for a great album. A lot of albums don't have it and are still wonderful. But the atmosphere of this record, kind of what a lot of people have said about the Pixies' Surfer Rosa, is it really feels like you're in a room with a band.
Yeah.
Like it's yeah, there's so much warmth and like vibrant energy. It's like you're able to, you know, eavesdrop on something.
Yeah.
Like you got plopped in the room and you get this special little.
Yeah.
This has such a tangible energy around it. Mm-hmm. It's really, really amazing.
And there's some of the things like what like Feist does where it's like, it really sounds like you can hear that she's like right up against the microphone. It's it sounds like she's just like whispering in your ear. It's like, that's amazing that you fucking captured that.
Totally. No, to hear that this album was just, you played every song twice and this is what came out is just like, holy shit, that's impressive.
Yeah, and I think they're almost all full takes. I think Dean might have like chopped like a few things, but like by and large, like it's just like full take. I know that I popped in one banjo note, or two. I popped in two.
I hate it now.
And, like, but I mean, I think Nate just like popped one or two things, and it was just like, you know, a significant flub.
Yeah.
It's like, da 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 blah blah da.
Yeah.
Let's just take this one out.
Yeah,
You know, so I don't think that like, you know, it bothers anything. But yeah, it's just all live, no overdubs really. Mm-hmm. Because we have to do it all fucking on stage.
Yeah.
So you
what it really feels like the most. Any of your recordings have captured kind of what the live thing is, because the live Schoenberg show has always been pretty crushing.
Yeah,
I think that's what the coolest thing is. I could say something about you as a musician and your band is when our scene was really blooming in Toronto in 2005, 2006.
Yeah.
There was a lot of different sounds going on, and a lot of really good bands, and there's a great community, but always the centerpiece or like the kind of one where we all turn our head to look up was the Schoenberg Fair.
Definitely.
Because it was such a thunderous.
Yeah.
And now a show, and the live thing really was captivating. And
we
I know
called
you guys
in the magazine the most masculine band of the city at one point.
Yeah, you know what?
Was really
that's pretty correct too. I'd say it was a not a tame show.
Also, but I really dreamboats though.
Yeah,
stop
it. It's a bunch of fellas, but so polite. And it was really amazing to see you guys show everybody in a blooming scene what it meant to perform live, and how to be performers. And then in each stage that your band took, kind of showed everybody. Well, then you have to grow though. So this is how you grow, and you learn your instrument better. Be it a guitar, a bass, or your throat, whatever your instrument is. And you showed everybody how to be a bar band, and then you showed everybody how to be musicians. And I think that's a really great gift that you've given to the Toronto music scene and everywhere that you've toured. And this album is a great final piece to that, to really show off how a band can grow when they stay committed to what they are.
Yeah.
Or what they want, more so. So I want to thank you for that and making this great record.
Definitely, it's amazing.
Thanks a lot, guys.
Yeah. Everyone that listens to this should be listening to this album.
Yes, please.
And to put a cap on what Greg's saying about like the journey of the band, like I just think you haven't lost the, like, you have, like, evolved if you listen to, like, your early stuff, like your first album, and then here you can see there's a huge, you know, like, journey that you've gone on as a band, but there's moments on the album where you hear the journey.
Yeah.
So, like, when I first started showing up with you guys, I remember when Nate started playing with a bass distortion pedal.
Yeah.
And being like, holy shit, a whole new world has opened up.
Yeah. It opened up his world and opened up ours as well.
And you hear on this album, you know, you're not relying on it as, you know, all the songs have to have that. But when it comes up, it's kind of like, it almost pulls me back to, like, seeing you at Rancho and being like, I remember that. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's like, you hear, or, like, you know, on this album, you guys used a lot of wah, which I didn't hear a lot when I was seeing you guys live. So it's kind of like, oh, here's where they are now, but now I'm hearing where they were and where they were before that. So it's just, it's cool to hear the journey of a band in an arrival album.
Yeah.
It's
absolutely. Oh, that's a, well, very well said.
Yeah.
Yeah. Super cool.
Yeah, it's amazing. I really love this album, yeah.
So please check out the album, schomburgfair.ca, is it? Or is it called?
Yeah,
it's
you CA. Just... S-C-H-O-M-B-E-R-G. Let's go.
Fair.
Just, yeah, fair. You can find us on Bandcamp or just throw it into Google.
Yeah.
And it'll come up and you'll be able to find all the stuff there.
Yeah.
Outstanding.
Yeah.
Sweet.
We're on the iTunes. You can get the entire catalog.
Yeah.
I think there's 5 records.
Yeah.
And a lot of them are up on streaming services. If you pay for Ardeo and you want to just give it a quick listen before we went to the Bandcamp to buy it when you love it.
Hell yeah. Yeah, check out some more Canadian
definitely
music.
Definitely buy it. Yeah.
A lot of homework for everybody this episode.
Gospel music, ripping guitar solos, space jams.
Yep.
Unbelievable drumming, three-part harmonies.
Mm-hmm.
Then you'll like it.
Yeah.
Yeah. Pete's got a swell voice, that drummer.
He's
one of the best drummers I've ever seen.
Like a boyd.
Yeah.
Well, the thing is, like, he is, like, you know, probably the strongest singer, but also, like, the prettiest.
Yeah, it is very pretty, his voice.
As well. Yeah, so it's, like, an interesting dynamic. The other thing that I like about the band is, like, it's not really, like, harmonies, because it took us a while to, like, figure out, like, what that actually word meant. Mm-hmm. We just thought it just meant you just sing together.
Yeah.
Right.
All you sing at the same time. That's probably harmony.
Yeah.
But it was actually, we were all hitting the same note.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah.
So it's just like a drone.
Yeah.
But it's like, but at 3 different octaves.
Right. That's what I was pretty sure it was for most of my life. Yeah.
Then Pete figured out the harmony.
No,
Nate
very
and
nice.
I still sing at the octaves.
Pretty good.
Yeah.
Well, you know, somebody's got to. And as far as your artwork, your painting, is there somewhere that people could take a look at that? Do you have a website up
or
anything?
You can go to mattbahen.com.
Okay.
MATTBAHEN.com.
Great.
I show at Le Gallery here in Toronto. They're at 1196, I think. Dundas Street East, right across from Cafe Novera.
Mm-hmm.
Sweet.
So my work's available there. And then,
is that right now that's happening?
I have work in the back all the time. There's
all the
guy,
time, okay.
Brendan George Coe, a photographer, the excellent show currently up at the gallery.
Oh, great.
If you're in New York City, you can go to the Lower East Side, to Broom Street, to Munch Gallery, and I've got work available there as well. And then I'll have work at the International Art Fair here in the fall.
Excellent.
Awesome.
Very good. We'll
Sweet.
Let people know about that when it gets closer to it.
Yeah.
Matt, you're the best.
You
Thanks
are.
For
being on the
guys,
show.
Thank you so much. That was awesome.
I had a great time.
Yeah.
Oh, good. The next time a white man's going to switch sides in an African country.
Yeah, we'll get
Let
you.
Me know.
Yeah. To find more of us, go to facebook.com/timebanditspodcast or go to timebanditspod on Twitter or you can go to modernsuperior.com. And babe,
that's
the score.
All right.